Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Left from Wendy Snyder. It's Friday. It's the best day ever invented. There's a lot going on in today's show. But first, we want to talk, Steve, about something you just mentioned in the news. Are you available to chat for just a little bit?
Sure, absolutely.
All right. You just mentioned in the news, and I know this is a fast-breaking story, but the wife of the two shooters in the San Bernardino shootings from the other day, the wife, as you just pointed out, had pledged allegiance to ISIS on a Facebook page. You had said that she had used a different name than her own, but had pledged allegiance of some sort on Facebook.
Right. It comes from the Associated Press is reporting it. The wife of the couple, I'll just read a bit of what they say, in the shooting, pledged allegiance to the Islamic State group and the terror group's leader on Facebook using an alias, then deleted the messages before the attacks. And they're citing a U.S. law enforcement official. The disclosure about the online activities of Tashfeen Malik provided the first significant detail suggesting a motive of her participation with her husband, Saeed Farouk, in the shootings that killed 14 people.
All right, so there's a couple questions. Wendy, go ahead.
All right, when I heard you say that, Steve, I looked to Bill and said, now Facebook has become this official declaration place. I know in the old days you can mail something to yourself with an idea to claim like copyright or trademark and it became a legal document. Now you post something on Facebook and it becomes a legal thing. This is crazy.
I don't get what you're saying, though.
I mean, she declared it on Facebook. Oh. It just seems silly to me, this whole thing.
Well, I don't know that she would have declared it, but, you know, they're going through, they confiscated their computers, and they're sort of looking through their digital footprint. I don't know if this is part of that, but they're saying that she had posted allegiance to ISIS under a different name. I don't think it was to declare responsibility for this attack. I think maybe it was to show
some sort of kinship between herself.
Good word, kinship.
And then why did she take it down?
Well, perhaps she thought better of it. I mean, she thought that she might be susceptible to discovery. I don't know why she would have taken it down, but she did.
It's so bizarre. We should do away with social media.
Oh, well,
I'm starting to think
that would take some doing.
I know, but it's like that's where people communicate. That's where people get, it's crazy.
Well, here's my question. What does anyone do about that? What does Facebook do about that? What do other people who might have read her post do about that? Everybody's always looking for clues and trying to prevent things like what happened the other day. So let's say you're going through a Facebook friend's page or just some acquaintance's page, and you see that they have put some post on there that they are of the same belief structure as ISIS. What do you do about that? What could you possibly do about that?
Look at some of the texts you receive or we receive here.
Yeah.
And some of the things they say about certain groups of people.
Yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
So then what if one of those people 2 weeks from now starts, you know, begins some sort of violent act?
Right.
You can go back and say, well, look, I got this text 2 weeks ago.
Right.
What should you have done with that?
I can't figure that out. I know after something awful has happened, you know, we all go back, as is the case in this particular instance, and we say, well, look, she posted on Facebook that she has the same beliefs as ISIS. She wanted to be part of ISIS. But just because, and you're right, Steve, I don't think a day goes by that I don't read something on Facebook and I go, wow, that guy does not like President
Look
Obama.
Look at the
that
texts we
like,
get.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm going to start pressing charges on some of these people.
But I just don't know what, like, this is valuable in finding out that, you know, there's a little bit of a history with her in a hate group, ISIS, a terrorist group. But beyond that, I wouldn't know what to do. Even if you're Facebook and, you know, they probably have the ability to flag certain words or something like that.
Yeah.
What do they do with that? They can't stop it. Just because somebody puts something like that, it doesn't mean you can stop anything.
If Facebook could take it down?
Yeah, you know what?
Why don't they?
I'm
if
sure
there's
they
some
could.
ISIS reference or hashtag jihad, can't they take it down and shouldn't they take that down?
They can, but then you would get so many people, even people who have no beliefs at all in common with ISIS, saying, well, what you're doing there is you're violating my rights to free speech.
It's their company, though. They can do whatever they want.
Okay, Wendy, but you know, obviously you know that's dangerous, right, when you start deciding what can and can't, and there's a line. But what if what she posted was, I like this group?
Right.
What is the, there's no sort of plotting to crime there. There's no connection that she would have got information about crime there. She's just making a statement. I mean, would you have that taken down?
As upsetting
I'm not in
as it,
charge, thank God, because I'm so wishy-washy, I don't know what I do.
But as upsetting as that is, let's say you had some friend on Facebook, and they just posted something the other day saying, hey, I know you might be shocked by this, but ISIS has some pretty good ideas, you know, that kind of thing. Even though you'd be shocked by it.
I'd delete them.
Would you get rid of them right off the bat?
I would.
Would you turn them in and expect Facebook to delete them?
No, but in this day and age, I think any mention of ISIS bears some attention.
What about in a private email? Let's say you're emailing Steve and myself, and you're just saying something as innocuous as, I think tomorrow we should talk about ISIS, but there could be some filter that a carrier has that says, boy, we're flagging anybody that mentions ISIS in their email.
Go ahead and talk to me.
Yeah.
Because I would say, yeah, we work on a radio show. We're going to discuss it because we're befuddled.
Right, right. What if they flagged the word befuddled? What would that
I don't know what to say. Then they could flag me because I'm always befuddled.
You're flagged already.
Wendy, I'm on my tweet deck right now, and I'm just going to search for tweets involving ISIS. And there have been
countless.
Yeah, in the past five seconds, there are dozens.
I know.
Countless.
And
I don't,
Steve
just
got red flagged.
Yeah, immediately.
I just searched ISIS. Okay, I just searched ISIS.
Now Steve's on a no-fly list.
And,
see how
and
quickly?
That would, but it would, you know, it would help the economy because more people would get jobs to read the filter. Anytime ISIS is flagged, you have to go through it and determine whether or not they are for or against.
That's you're creating jobs then. That's a good thing. All right, we've got much to discuss with you on today's show. We're thrilled that you're here. If you want to jump in, please do. 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leffin. It's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
We got an interesting texts, a couple of them. And yesterday we were speaking to ABC News correspondent Alex Stone, and we didn't get to, we really ran out of time as we were finding out more information about what was going on in San Bernardino. And someone reminded us as they texted it, why is there no picture surfacing of the wife?
Of Tashfeen Palik, right?
Yes.
I don't know why. Every time that they've shown the two boxes, his picture is prominent, and there's several pictures of him, and her picture is always like a fuzzy outline of a woman. But
maybe she didn't give permission, like in Cops. If you don't give permission to have yourself on camera, they blur your face.
That could be it.
But
or maybe she was absent the day that all terrorists had their photographs taken. That happens sometimes.
That terror you.
I have no idea why. Steve, any idea why? Are there just no file photographs of her available anywhere?
That's probably the case. I mean, she seems to have been less social than her husband, so maybe there just aren't pictures out there.
Well, you would almost think, you know how you Google anyone and then 14 pictures come up? Isn't that strange?
Unflattering, I might
most
add.
Most unflattering. But yeah, there is still no, there's got to be a file photograph of her somewhere. Does she have a driver's license? They could probably access that.
And I'm sorry, but I cannot stop thinking about their child that they dropped off at the grandmother's house.
One of the weirdest aspects of the whole, I mean, every part of the story is disturbing and strange, but that part is really strange.
I can't stop thinking about that kid.
Yeah, well, you think about what the future holds for that kid as it's explained, because now we're talking about a baby who has no understanding, but at some point somebody's going to have to explain what had happened in the background, and there's no making sense of it.
No, and I mean, I'm sure they've interviewed, and whose mother was it? Do we know that, Steve? Do we know if it was...
Well, I would believe it would have been his mother because she came from Saudi Arabia from Pakistan. So.
And he was a U.S. citizen. So
He was born in Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So if it's his mother, obviously people have talked to her. I just want to know what her feelings and where her loyalties lie. It's just, I need to know more.
Right. Right.
I just cannot stop thinking about that poor orphan child right now.
And
I know you can't pick your parents, but.
Right. Right.
It just, it saddens me.
I was telling you, and I'll tell Steve, I'll tell everybody, before the show I was telling you how they did a piece on Ted Cruz yesterday on The Daily Show. And most of the gist of it was how Ted Cruz all of a sudden has been surging in the approval ratings. And he seems to be number two now to Donald Trump. And there's a sidebar to Trump that I'll get to in just a little bit, too. But they had mentioned that Ted Cruz, in the wake of these shootings, actually sent out a reminder to people that he was going to be speaking at a gun rally the very next day and he didn't want that to be lost in the message, you know, in everything that was going on. He wanted to make sure that his constituents knew that that was going to go on as planned, come out and see him at a gun rally.
Today.
Oh, it's happening today.
National Second Amendment Coalition at Crossroads Shooting Sports in Johnston, Iowa today.
So you would almost think as a tactical move, when something this horrendous happens, you might want to distance yourself from it. But Ted Cruz, for some reason, has not only not distanced himself from it, he's embraced it and has said gun rally goes on as planned.
Okay, well, think of yourself as a candidate, and you have, you're in Iowa where there's, you know, a hunting culture, a strong gun culture with the NRA
right.
and all of that. If you were to cancel in the wake of this,
it looks weak.
It would cost you, I think, with support.
Yeah.
And according to a report in Politico, this event was previously scheduled, and the reason it wasn't canceled because Cruz spokesman Catherine Frazier told Politico, quote, even in the midst of horrific events like this, we should never rush to take away the basic liberties enshrined in our Constitution that are guaranteed to law-abiding American citizens.
Gutsy. And I say gutsy because the word I want to use cannot be said on the radio.
As Politico pointed out, the Crossroads Shooting Sports boasts that part of its mission is to, quote, glorify God in all we do and to be a positive influence to all who come in contact with Crossroads Shooting Sports, LLC.
It's always interesting how somehow God seeps
in. Did God have a gun?
I don't remember
was
God
he
carrying.
Packing?
I haven't seen every photograph of him, but in every photograph I've seen, there is never a
He wore
a
sandals, Bill. You have to wear closed-toed shoes when you're
you have
packing.
A gun.
Okay, if I could whip out my NRA card now, though.
Please, Steve.
You know, I mean, again, this is what makes them angry, and, you know, we can't...
I know.
You can't confuse...
I know. I understand.
Wait, what's making who angry?
Well, look, this is a legitimate, upstanding, legal, law-abiding club.
Right.
They shouldn't suffer because someone else did something terrible with the gun.
And this, the Saeed Farouk.
Send your text to 312.
I know. Send your angry texts.
Saeed Farouk went through the proper channels, didn't he?
He did.
But how did he have all that ammunition?
Legally obtained.
Well, okay, but so, and that's one of the questions. Yes, he obtained it legally. Should you be able to? I mean, that's what the question should be. Should you legally be able to obtain weapons like that?
Yeah, so, what do you need it for? Not hunting. And where
right.
do you register for pipe bombs?
You don't register for pipe bombs. That's a separate entity. Can I quickly throw out the Donald Trump thing? I know this is impossible because we only have 30 seconds here. Every time Donald Trump says or does something outrageous, I say to myself, that's the one that will hang him. He just said that, and his popularity will now all of a sudden wane because he has said or done something. I keep saying that to myself. So a little over a week ago, he makes fun of this New York columnist who has a hard time speaking properly. You saw the tape. I'm sure you've either seen or heard the tape where Donald Trump goes, "Have you seen this guy?" And he makes a move with his hand, and he's having a hard time getting the words out. And the man is he has a hard time
right.
expressing himself. And I said to myself, "Well, this must be the one."
So
he's just
down.
Taking a terrible shot at a guy who can't control. Just the opposite again. His poll numbers just went higher than they've ever been.
All I can think of, Bill, is in this day and age when everybody says we are too politically correct, I feel that some people, and I don't know for a fact, but I feel that they go, all right, look at him. He has no filters. He says what he wants. We
sure.
should be able to say what he wants. Something about that excites some people.
I guess so.
Because
I don't know what he has
I
to
don't
do.
Know either.
He could stab somebody in front of a crowd and you go, well, now his numbers will fall. Nope, they'll go up again. I don't know. It's so baffling, isn't it? All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. We have a big show ahead. Mitch Albom's going to join us. Tuesday with Maury, I think, is probably his best known
Tuesdays.
Work. Tuesdays with Maury. I didn't read the whole thing. I only read the first Tuesday. I didn't have time for the whole book. But we'll talk to Mitch Albom after the news. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Great job, Steve, as usual. And And I'm wondering if you might want to stick around. I know you had the Steve Bertrand Book Club going for a while.
Yeah.
We're about ready to talk to Mitch Albom, who gave us Tuesdays with Maury, The Five People You Meet in Heaven, and about, 40-some other books.
He's so prolific. He's doing about a book a year or sometimes more. That's impressive. I know people who don't read a book a year. You're not reading a book a year? He's quick on the typewriting draw. He really is.
We are waiting to get him on the line. He is going to be at Anderson's Bookshop Monday at Community Christian Church in Naperville. You can go to andersonsbookshop.com. They just opened an Anderson's in my hometown of LaGrange.
Oh, they did. That's a great bookshop.
It is so nice to be able to just walk to the bookstore.
Yeah.
It's really fun. I know you have your Kindles and you can, I need to touch and feel
the best.
And smell. I love the smell of a good book.
I'm with you all the way.
You
it's
do
the
get
best.
That.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know how much I love musicians as
right.
well, right?
Yes.
All right. I am looking so forward to meeting Frankie Presto, and I'm pretty sure that our next guest can introduce me to Frankie.
I'm 100% positive.
So
they're loading him up as we speak. Now, I had not read the book, and Steve, we should ask you because you are so good with the authors. Have you interviewed Mitch Albom in the past?
Yeah, a couple times. You have? He was right. over at the Black Dog Studios for a video.
All right,
Barnes and Noble.
Go ahead, Wayne.
No, I just thought we had him on, but
false
Kevin,
alarm.
Kevin's doing his own interview with him.
I actually do an imitation.
You want to do the imitation?
Do you want to know my impressions of Mitch?
Oh, yes. That's really funny.
You do Yoko Ono and Mitch Albom?
Well, I'll tell you, I know this much. This is the story about a young musician who turns into this phenom.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't wait to read this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to read a book this year.
This is
and
the
this
one.
Is going to be
if
it.
If you're going to read one book this year, make this be the book.
You've got 3 weeks left.
I know, but this is just right up my alley. Kevin, he is not ready.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Mitch has not read the book?
No.
He's reading it
weird?
Now, and then we will talk.
He wants to be prepared for the interview.
He wrote it, but he's just now, Steve, he's just now sitting down and reading the book. I hate to admit this, didn't read Tuesdays with Maury, but saw the made-for-TV movie. Hank Azaria, who is one of the guys on The Simpsons, played Mitch in the movie, and then Jack Lemmon played the title character,
that's
Maury.
That's right.
Well, look, he did something that, I mean, authors dream of, and usually the ones who do it aren't the ones who set out to do it, but... You know, he created a national phenomenon with that book.
Yeah.
And then, you know, subsequently almost created a genre of books for himself.
Yep.
It just struck a nerve. It was at a moment and touched so many people that, you know, it was a national movement.
And this new book, The Magic Strings of Frankie Presto, I'm sure this is going to become a musical.
Do you think a musical?
Oh, my God. I totally do. It's the story of Frankie. Frankie Presto, he's a Spanish war orphan raised by a blind music teacher. 9 years of age, Frankie's sent to America in the bottom of a boat. His only possession is an old guitar and 6 magical strings. This sounds so amazing to
you
me.
You had me at magical strings. That's the first thing I look when I'm looking for a book. I always say to the book vendor, are there magic strings in the story? Because that's what I want to read about.
But he ends up being a rock star. So now it's like I am buying this book for my 16-year-old son, Michael, who wants to be a rock star someday. And it's just a beautiful thing. Frankie's talent is touched by the gods, and it weaves him through the musical landscape of the 20th century. You got your classical, your jazz, your rock and roll, all these different types of music. And it turns out Frankie Presto is kind of a combination of, like, Little Richard, mm-hmm. Elvis Presley,
And what happens in the end?
All right. I know I'm really... That's why I don't like doing movie reviews.
I want to know how it ends.
Okay? I don't like doing movie reviews or book reviews because I am so terrible at this. I haven't read it, thank God. But Frankie Presto kind of comes from a Paul Stanley, a Tony Bennett, Burt Bacharach.
A combination of Paul Stanley of Kiss.
Oh, wait, there's more.
Tony Bennett, Burt Bacharach. Okay, who else?
Wynton Marsalis.
Yeah.
Roger McGuinn from The Byrds.
Right.
Darlene Love. And
Psy?
I don't believe Frankie Presto has any kind of sigh in him at all.
The Gangnam Style guy? He's not involved in this. All right.
God, I hope not, or I will not.
I'm still going to read. If there's magic strings, you just sold me a copy of this book. I won't read a book unless there's magic strings involved. I insist.
You know, maybe we could take a quick break, and I think we'll come right back with Mitch Albom, because, you know, really, I would like to get Paul Stanley out of that.
You don't think he fits the rest of the group?
I don't know, but see, I don't know Frankie Presto, and I want to get to know him, but, you know, you whip out a Paul Stanley, he doesn't belong with the Tony Bennett and Burt Bacharach and Darlene Love, Roger McGuinn. That is just one of these things is not like the other.
Him. All right, well, we'll take it up when and if we find Mitch Albom. Kevin is on the hunt. We'll figure that out next. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right. This is, I believe, one of the few times we are doing an interview without the guest.
You don't need the guest to do an interview. That's the old way.
We sure don't. The Magic Strings of Frankie Presto. What I'm excited about, this is the first ever soundtrack that comes with a book, The Magic Strings of Frankie Presto. So if you get the book, you'll get the soundtrack as well.
Mm-hmm.
He will be at Anderson's Bookshop, 7 p.m. Monday. Well, he might be late or not show up. 7 p.m. Monday at Community Christian Church, 1635 Emerson Lane in Naperville. You can go to andersonsbookshop.com to find out the schedule. And
this is like a Where's Waldo episode. We know Mitch Albom's out there somewhere. We just can't find him, so we'll look.
All right, well, let me tell you a little bit more about Frankie Presto, and really, who needs a guest to do the interview?
You don't need a guest.
Frankie Presto comes, he's a little child, he's grown up with a blind musician, that's who he lived with, and at 9 years old, he's sent to America, he's a Spanish war orphan, and he has magic strings, six magical strings and a guitar, that's all he has with him on this book.
That's it.
Sounds very magical.
Yeah.
And then Frankie elevates himself to a rock star, and his gift then becomes his burden, Bill, as he realizes that he can actually affect people's futures. His guitar strings turn blue whenever a life is altered.
They're
Isn't
like
that
mood
cool?
strings. He's got mood strings. Why didn't he call the book Mood Strings?
I don't know.
Sell more copies.
And then The Magic Strings of Frankie Presto is a classic in the making. And I know that Mitch Albom has written, I think, 43 to 50 books.
He could be writing one as we speak.
I bet he is. He was also a radio broadcaster, television broadcaster,
right.
And he's been a musician, a lifelong
Sports
musician.
Columnist. He's done a little bit of everything.
Too?
Yeah, he's done everything. It's terrible when your gift becomes your burden, Wendy. I've said that 1,000 times. That's the worst curse you could ever have is when your gift becomes a burden.
Well, I think we have him now, so he may be a little late for his appearance Monday night.
Tardy.
I'm going to bring
that.
Books.
I know we're adults, but I'm going to start bringing that word back for adults. Mitch?
Hey, Mitch, how are you?
Hi, I'm so sorry. I must have had the wrong information, and I apologize.
We were so worried. Wendy and I were worried about you. We were so concerned.
But I'll tell you, Mitch, we don't really need you anymore because we did such a great job talking about Frankie Presto, and I love musicians, and I can't. Can you introduce me to this Frankie Presto you write about?
Well, Frankie Presto, my Frankie Presto, is a fictional character, but he is the greatest musician to ever walk the earth, and he's so gifted that he can actually change people's lives with his music. And when he plays and he changes a life, a string turns blue, and then it sort of evaporates and disappears, and he gets six chances with his six strings to do this. So it's sort of a magical, almost Forrest Gump-like tale, because he's totally fictional, but everything else in the book is real. So he plays with Duke Ellington, and he discovers Hank Williams, and he's an Elvis Presley's band, and takes to perform one night, and he's at Woodstock and all that. So if you love music, it's a great story that way, but it's got an inspirational message about the fact that everybody sort of has a talent that can affect other people's lives.
Mitch, I've noticed in this book and in many of the books you've written, there are some ethereal undertones to what you've written. Is that on purpose?
Yes. I tend to write books based on messages that I think are important or things that I've learned in life that I think are important. I don't tend to write books just for the pure entertainment value of them or a detective story or something like that. However, I also understand that I want to be entertaining. So you know, the best thing you can do is be entertaining, and then when you're done, people still remember the book and remember the messages of it, and I try to do that for sure in all of my fiction.
Hmm.
I'll let you in on a little secret, and the listeners as well. I have always wanted to be a musician, always.
Mm-hmm.
And at 50 years of age, I started taking voice lessons. My 16-year-old son, Michael, plays guitar. Dylan, my 13-year-old, plays drums. My husband plays guitar.
How old is he?
He's 46.
All right.
So we got a PA system and a drum kit in the basement, and on Saturday nights we go down and jam together. And what is, you're a lifelong musician. Everyone at some point wants to be in a band or joins a band. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I think that that is true. In fact, I actually play with a band of musicians. I play with a band of writers who all want to be musicians.
Wait, is this the one with Amy Tan?
Amy Tan.
Yeah.
And many more. And I find almost everybody wants to be a musician. But one of the tenets of the book is that everybody is in a band in life. Only some of the bands play music. But all of us are in a band. You know, your family's a band. Your workplace is a band. The army's a band. And, you know, somebody's the drummer who keeps a steady beat. And somebody's the person who gets to show off out front. And that's kind of how life is. And that's one of the basic tenets of the Magic Strings of Frankie Presto.
And what's perfect, I mean, have you had a Mitch album? Because how perfect is that?
Well, you know, funny you should say that. When I tried to be a musician, which is what I wanted to be when I was younger, I didn't have any success at all. I was a total failure for several years. I played every dive club in New York and got every door slammed on me, you know, anything you can imagine. And then when I became a writer, I ended up meeting a lot of musicians because I guess I wasn't a threat. And when they all wanted to be writers and I wanted to be a musician. So with this book, they've actually made a soundtrack album. A bunch of musicians who I know who let me sort of use them in the book, people like Tony Bennett and Burt Bacharach and Wynton Marsalis and Darlene Love and Lyle Lovett and Ingrid Michaelson, Paul Stanley from Kiss, a bunch of others, who have become friends of mine. They let me sort of write as them for a couple pages in the book when they met Frankie Presto, or they fell in love with Frankie Presto, or they helped Frankie Presto, whatever. And then they were so kind of, I don't know, entertained by the idea that they ended up making a soundtrack album of songs that I write about fictionally, that Frankie Presto sang, but they ended up writing them for real and recording them. So I have finally got sort of an album because I'm credited as the writer of the songs because of the words. So it's after 35 years, I finally have come full circle.
Awesome. And working with Roger McGuinn, that's pretty exciting, from the Byrds. And I think he's from Chicago.
He is. Yes,
yeah.
He is. He grew up there, and he's a great guy. He's in the book as well. And he also comes and plays with the Rock Bottom Remainders. Don't ask me why. I think it's thrumming, but maybe Kitty. I don't know.
Mitch, we were talking about the fact that you've written now over 40 books. As you're writing one, are you already plotting ahead to what the next one or two will be? How does that play out?
Well, you're giving me too much credit. I think that might be the number of them sold, but not how many. I've written, I think 14 or something like that. But even so, if you write more than one, the question's valid. And no, you know what I end up saying is that, you know, people always ask me how long it takes to do a book, and I say, well, it's a two-part answer. One is the length of time from when you sat down at the computer or a typewriter to do it, and the other is the rest of your life. Because everything that you learn in life, you end up rolling into your books,
sure,
and certainly in mine. So, you know, it usually takes me a couple of years to put one together, and I try not to think about a next one until I've got, one finished. It's hard enough when they make movies out of them, and you're asked to sort of go back and be involved. In fact, I was just talking to somebody about that just before I was talking to you about the previous book that I wrote and the movie that they're making out of it, and it's sort of like, oh, right, I have to, you know, oh, that story, yeah, that character, that's, your mind is kind of on the new one.
Now, The Magic Strings of Frankie Presto, is this going to hopefully become a movie or a musical? Because, boy, it sure sounds like it should.
There's actually interest in doing both. It's the first time anything that I've ever written they've wanted to make into a Broadway show. But I guess I can understand the way I look at it, because it's the backdrop of the 20th century of music. So you have everything from Django Reinhardt, the jazz guitar player from the 30s, all the way up to, you know, modern stuff in the year 2000. So, and movies, they always sort of talk about, but, you know, if it happens, it happens. I've been lucky. I've had four of my books have been made into movies. But it's a whole different process. I live to write them, and then what the life they take on their own afterwards is sort of gravy.
All right, and I'd like to know, first of all, let's just say that we did a really great interview without you and continue to do a great interview with you. But
you only get paid for half of it, though, Mitch. Sorry.
But Mitch's album will be at Anderson's Bookshop, 7 p.m. Monday, Community Christian Church, 1635 Emerson Lane out in Naperville. You can go to AndersonBookshop.com. You can also go to MitchAlbum.com. And when are you coming through Chicago with the Rock Bottom Remainders?
Well, we have kind of a scorched earth policy, meaning once we play a city, they never ask us to come back. And I think we've already done Chicago. So that big crater that you see somewhere on a stage, that was where we once played. So I don't think we'll be coming back.
Darn it.
Well, if you All do, right. will you keep us posted?
Sure. You'll hear it like a meteor coming from the sky. And that's about the sound of our music, too.
Mitch, thanks so much. We're all excited about the book again, The Magic Strings of Frankie Presto, available wherever books are sold, or see Mitch as he signs and talks to the fans at Anderson's Bookshop, and that's going to be at 7 o'clock on Monday in Naperville. Thanks, Mitch. Have a great holiday season.
My pleasure. Sorry for the mix-up.
Don't
there.
Worry.
Oh, no.
For me. You were probably much better without me.
All right. Well, rock on, Mitch. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. Mitch Album, The Magic Strings of Frankie Presto. Mm-hmm. I am picking up a copy, and I am going to read it. I did say that would be the only book
you
I read this year.
You said this will be your book for
and
the year.
And then Steve pointed out we really are running out of time, so maybe not by the end of the year.
2016.
He doesn't write long books.
Right.
Is it over 18 pages?
It's more than 18 pages, yeah.
Might be in trouble.
Is that too many? All right, we'll take a break. More show coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.
This music reminds me
of
our next guest. I don't know why. It's perfect with him.
Yes. This
TV
is
Show Patrol.
Kurt Wagner is our guest, although you suggested we introduce Kurt Warner,
no,
who was the quarterback for the Rams
Kurt,
for a number
I'm
of
sorry,
years.
But every time, if I don't look at my sheet, I always want to say Kurt Warner, and then I say to Bill, who the heck is Kurt Warner? And you explained it to me.
Former football quarterback. He was a bag boy at a grocery store. He was not playing in the NFL. And then he became the Rams quarterback. He did really well.
But then you said off the air that we should get him instead of Kurt Wagner.
Not instead of, along with.
Oh, see, no.
Battle of the Kurts.
I like my Kurt Wagner.
All right. Kurt, how are you?
I was a former bag boy, too.
Were you also? How about
I'm not
that?
A football player.
Well, you guys would have something to chat about then.
Now it's just called a bagger to be politically correct, guys, because there
right?
are girls that bag as well.
We apologize for any confusion. How are things, Kurt? Everything good?
Everything's great.
We have not seen you in 3 weeks. You were off on a trip.
I was in Europe.
Doing what?
Wearing your little Swiss Alp hat?
No, I didn't have that. But I did buy an Italian hat.
Oh, you did?
Can't wait to see it.
I was in Rome, and I went to the set of a new show that should be coming next fall called Medici, Masters of Florence.
What is that about?
It's about the Medici family of Italy. They sort of founded the modern banking system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that will be a
Sounds
TV show.
Boring.
No, come on, Wendy.
I gotta be honest with you.
They founded the modern banking system.
It'll be a lot of numbers.
Well, you know, back in those days in Italy, it was like everybody was, out to get the other family, and so there's a lot of intrigue and stuff like that. I don't think it's going to be boring.
No? All right.
From what I thought. And they're letting them film in all these historic places, so I got to see a lot of really cool stuff.
That sounds good. Is it an American cast or an Italian cast?
It has some Americans. Dustin Hoffman's in it.
Dustin Hoffman?
Yeah, Richard Madden's in it from Game of Thrones.
Wow.
And, I have not watched one episode of Game of Thrones. I hate to admit that because it is very, very popular.
Yeah.
Well, they just released yesterday a new teaser for the new season of Game of Thrones.
And they show somebody that everybody thought was dead, but he's not dead. He shows up in the new in the trailer for it, doesn't he?
Well, he shows up, but it's all the old footage of him being killed and everything. It shows like all the people who've been killed dramatically over the entire series.
That's a lot.
Yeah,
that's
well,
a lot.
I guess I should change that to not all the people, but a lot of people.
A good number of the people. Now, can I go back a little bit to your Italian trip? Did you get to talk to Dustin Hoffman? Was he there on the set?
He was not there. He was done with his bit. I did talk to Richard Madden and some Italian actors and some other British people.
Yeah. Just random British people, or were they involved in the production?
No, they're involved in the production.
Okay, good. Then you spent your time wisely, Kurt.
They were just vacationing, and right. Kurt talked to them.
Hello, random British people. Do you like my new hat? It's from Italy.
And you know, when we say Kurt Wagner is a man of many hats, we mean it.
He is. That would be a good show, is Kurt Wagner's hats from around the world. Wouldn't that be a great show?
More exciting than Bankers.
Well, yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
The Bankers thing, you know, maybe I didn't sell that well enough, but it's going to be good. I mean, just look up the Medici family, and you'll see all kinds of really crazy, bizarre history.
And nothing does, no one does it quite like the Italians, I will say. A lot of Italian issues in families.
Sure.
That's why we have a lot of spin-off pizza places, because they take their recipe and go elsewhere.
Right.
Right. Well, they also sort of kick-started the Renaissance, so they were big into supporting art, artists and stuff, Michelangelo, and science and all this other stuff. So.
Can I ask, Kurt, in other countries, like here in the United States, we take our entertainment very seriously. We have people, yourself included, whose job it is to be a critic for television or film. Is it like that in Europe, too? Do they take it that seriously in Europe?
Well, you know, it was interesting because we had to really explain to them that I wouldn't be on the set just snapping bad photos of people and reporting on people yelling at each other or whatever, you know, because... Mm-hmm. They're very leery of press, and I don't think that they, I'm not sure about this, but it seems like maybe they don't have a lot of TV press in the way that we do here. We really had to, you know, the guy who created that show is Frank Spotnitz, who is an American. He's currently, his show Man in the High Castle is on Amazon right now, and he's involved in that show. He created the show, and so... You know, I got in through him and his people, and we really had to explain to them that I wasn't, that people could talk to me.
Right.
And that I could be there and everything like that. So that was interesting.
What television shows are popular there in that part of the world? Is it American-based shows or is it local shows?
They have local shows. They have a lot of local shows. But I they have a couple channels, and we talked about this a lot, that show 24 hours a day, all the Law and Orders dubbed in Italian.
Really?
Yeah. And that apparently dubbing, like being a dubbing actor, like a voice actor, is a big deal there because they dub everything because nobody wants to read subtitles just like you.
Yeah, I mean, really, the only movie I saw with subtitles was Das Boot, and I never wanted to go back to another subtitled movie. You know, I like to sit back and relax. Yeah. I don't want to have to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm okay with subtitles, but only when I'm... you know, only when I'm not falling asleep or whatever.
Kurt, a week...
I'm really lazy. I can't do subtitles.
A week or so ago, I was in Costa Rica, and I had the TV on for a night, and they had Two and a Half Men on. And the guy who did the voice for the little kid, you know, the half man on Two and a Half Men, it was a guy with a really deep voice. Mucho gusto. Like, he would say everything with a really deep voice, but he was like a 9-year-old kid. It didn't make any sense.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious.
That is really funny.
They do a pretty good job. They did a pretty good job of dubbing. Like you can only see every once in a while that the mouths were moving when the words weren't going, you know?
Oh, so good.
They did a pretty good job.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk more to Kurt Wagner in just a little bit. He is not feeling 100% today, so he's at home, but we've got a lot to discuss with him TV-wise. Stick around. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
We are talking television with Kurt Wagner, and we were briefly talking about La Familia Medici.
The founding fathers of the modern banking
the
system.
Medicis,
the
yes.
Medicis.
I got to throw in a little history for you. The Medicis produced four popes. Leo the X, Clement the VII, Pius the IV, and Leon the XI. And their genes have been mixed into many of Europe's royal families. The last Medici ruler died without a male heir in 1737, ending that family dynasty after almost three centuries.
And you don't want to watch Meet
now
the Medicis? Meet the Medici is going to be the biggest show of the year next year.
Meet the Medici's.
Is that what it's called? I don't remember what it was.
It's a half-hour comedy. No, it's not.
And Dustin Hoffman will trip over the ottoman when he comes in. Yeah. Honey, I'm home. And then he'll fall. It'll be great. You'll see.
Yep.
It'll be great.
Yep.
Kurt, what about last night? The Wiz was on NBC.
I forgot to watch it.
I watched between periods of the Blackhawks games. I'd flip over and I'd watch little bits of it. It looked pretty good to me. Did you get to see any of this?
I saw some of it, yeah.
How was Queen Latifah as the wizard? Because everybody was mad that a chick was doing it.
She's very androgynous.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why she'd make a really good wizard.
Yeah.
I hear all wizards are androgynous.
Not all. Many. No. Many.
That was okay. David Alan Greer as the lion was really good.
Yeah.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
And what was her name? The Queen Eveline, Mary J. Blige.
Yep.
Sang only one song, which was very unfortunate because she needed to sing way more songs.
You know what was interesting when it was really over? Because it was billed as a 3-hour event over on NBC, and it ended about 15 or 20 minutes early. And then they had to quickly shift over to Channel 5 News.
Were they ready? They
seemed a little bit ready, but a little bit like, wasn't this supposed to be 3 hours? You know, there was a lot of that kind of look.
That's the part I'm sorry I missed.
Yeah.
We go live back to you now 15 minutes earlier. Oh, crap. We just got our Chinese food delivered.
Well, you know, when I set my thing to record, it said till 9:45, and I thought that was odd. But I think they built in 15 minutes thinking that some of the scenes might go longer. But then apparently it didn't.
And are these going to be an annual event from now on, Kurt? I know they did Peter Pan last year, and I think they did one a couple years ago, too.
Sound of Music 2 years ago, yeah.
Sound of Music, yeah. Right. Yeah, so yeah. It must do pretty good in the ratings. They'll keep doing one a year or so?
Oh, I think so. I think they'll do it as a holiday. It's like another holiday special.
Yeah. Wonder what next year will bring.
I don't know.
West Side Story, that's what they should do.
That would be good. I would watch West Side Story. Or a musical about the Medicis, the modern family of banking. Would you watch that?
Medici Musicale?
Yes.
I would watch that.
That's what it would be called. What about holiday programming? That's starting to kick in, isn't it, Kurt?
It sure is. There are 1,001 movies you can see, and they all have the same plot.
What's the same plot in all the movies?
Well, there's groupings, you know. There's like a businesswoman has to go take care of some thing that she's inherited, and she wants to sell it off, but then she meets a hunky guy who lives there on the farm and decides...
Bob Evans?
Not Bob Evans.
Keep it, you know? So there's like, they all seem to have, you know, there's the dog ones, there's the Grinchy person falls in love ones.
Can I tell you which one you're missing, and it's my favorite one? It's the family that just wants to get all the kids and their spouses together for the holiday, but everybody's got something going on. They just can't make it to mom and dad's for Christmas.
Yep.
But at the last minute, spoiler alert, somehow miraculously they all do show up, and it's the best Christmas ever.
And the new ones are the ones, the snowstorm waylay somebody on a trip, and they are forced to share a car, share a train, or like a train, you know, a train car, or a hotel room with somebody that they did not get along with.
Yep.
And then they fall in love.
When we were putting up our tree the other night, there was a movie on one of the channels that I don't even think men are supposed to watch. There's a couple channels that only women are supposed to watch. So they had a
Lifetime for Women.
It's Lifetime for Women. I'm not supposed to watch that.
Lifetime's got they have tons of movies.
Well, the one that I saw, and I highly recommend if you're anywhere near a TV, don't just turn this off, but unplug your television so that it doesn't accidentally turn on its own. It's a movie called Noel, and it's got Susan Sarandon in it. And I'm trying to think of who
Meredith Baxter Burney has
she
got
wasn't,
to be
it was,
in it.
It was so bad that Meredith Baxter Burney said, I'm not doing this. I want no part of this. Penelope Cruz is in it.
Whoa.
It's got like a pretty impressive list. Like I said, Susan Sarandon.
That's an old big screen movie, isn't it? I think
In theaters? Was it really?
Empty theaters.
Well, it's about three miracles that happen at Christmas time all at the same time. Like, for instance, one guy, there's a cop, and it's Paul...
Anka?
Not Paul Anka. The guy from the Fast and the Furious movies who died a couple of years
ago.
Oh, Paul Walker.
Paul Walker. Oh, Paul Walker. Sorry. He's a cop, and he's in a diner, and the guy who runs the diner is Alan Arkin, and Alan Arkin thinks that he used to be married to Paul Walker in another life. I know you look shocked by that because even the people in the movie seemed shocked by that.
2004.
Is it that old? Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's Three Christmas Miracles.
Chaz Palminteri directed it.
Chaz Palminteri's in it. He's
David
in it.
Hubbard wrote it.
Yeah. So if you're anywhere near this movie, do everything you can to not watch it.
No, I
watched
I see
no,
it.
No, you don't. No, you don't. But the categories you were just describing, Kurt, about how every Christmas made-for-TV movie fits, that movie, Noel, has every one of those in it, the ones you described, every one
right.
are in it.
Right, right. And Angels.
Yeah, there's always Angels.
About Angels or Royalty.
Right, right.
Some kind of royalty thing happening there.
Now, we used to see when we were all growing up, the big stars would always have Christmas holiday specials, but that doesn't seem to be as much that anymore,
does it? Who are the big stars? Aren't the Kardashians having one?
Do they have one?
I don't know. I don't want to.
They do. But there's no...
I haven't read about... But they, you know, there's Taraji P. Henson and her Empire co-star, Terrence Howard, they have a special coming up.
Oh, they do?
Like a variety holiday special coming up.
I bet the Muppets will have a Christmassy thing. Have you been watching the new Muppets seasons?
No, I haven't watched much since the beginning.
My boys like it.
Do they like it? Yeah. It's not been doing well in the ratings.
I don't like it. I can't. I saw a little. It's okay. For some reason, my kids have been liking it.
Well, Kurt, weren't you the one who said that they're trying to determine if it's for adults or for kids? They can't quite get a beat on who's the show being made for.
Yeah, I think they're trying to just hit both, but
hard to pull that off.
Yeah. Oh, you know who has a holiday special?
Who's that?
Bill Murray.
Seriously?
Yeah, it came out today on Netflix. It's streaming starting today on Netflix. A Very Murray Christmas.
I read that to you yesterday. Remember
with
I said A Very Murray Christmas. Is this Bill Murray's project with his bros?
And who else is in it? Do we know who else is in it, Kurt?
Well, let's see. It looks like George Clooney and some blonde.
Oh, an angel just got a pair of wings.
Yeah, I think Bill Murray just sent me some money or something.
George Clooney. Clooney's in it, and who else? What other
stars?
That
was perfect timing, Kurt.
I know. I don't know. I can't tell. I'm trying to see here.
That's all I need is Clooney. If Clooney's in it, I'm there. I want to see it. And do they address the Modern Family of banking at all in this special? Because that's what people want to see now.
Oh, it's got Clooney, Paul McCartney, Pope Francis. No, that's kidding. I'm kidding. That's at the beginning of his teaser for this. It looks like it's got a lot of people in it, though.
All right.
I see Amy Poehler in here.
All right.
She's everywhere.
Very popular.
But, yeah.
Well, Kurt, thanks so much. We hope you're feeling better.
Yeah.
And will we see you before?
I'm going to show you my pictures.
You want pictures from the trip?
Yeah.
All right. No. Bring them in. Just photos
pictures of
the house.
Refrigerator.
Here's some pictures from my house.
Next time I come to the studio, I'll bring my my slideshow.
We are looking forward to it. Thanks so much, Kurt.
Thanks,
enjoy
Kurt.
The rest of the week.
Yeah, hey, and if anybody wants to complete list of the holiday specials, it's on my website.
It's TVShowPatrol.com.
Let's all say it together. Ready?
Ready on three. 1, 2, 3.
TVShowPatrol.com.
All right, feel better, Kurt.
All right, Merry Christmas.
Take
ho,
care.
Ho, ho.
Bye. All right, that's Kurt Wagner. He's not feeling well. He'll be okay. Don't you worry. We'll be back after this. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Pretty sad news to wake up to. I don't remember if I saw it last night. I think it was this morning, early this morning, that Stone Temple Pilots, what was his revolver band that he was in? Velvet Revolver. Scott Weiland passed away, dead at 48. Ron Onesti on the line with us. Arcata Theater, I noticed on your schedule at oshows.com that Scott Weiland was scheduled to play there, Ron.
Good morning, Wendy. Hi, Bill. Yeah, actually, we did play here. He was one of the last shows. He was just here 12 days ago.
Oh.
And it was, you know, I'm a big fan of Stone Temple Pilots. And if you know, you know, if you've ever seen Scott Weiland in the past when he was with Velvet Revolver, and these performances were really, really spectacular. Here's a guy who really, you know, was animated and got the audience going crazy and you know, really, I mean, really crazy, almost to the point where, you know, it was not moshing, but just really got the audience all revved up. And when I booked them, because, again, you know, it's one of the things we do at the Arcata is bring the music that I like, and I'm a big fan, like I said, and to get Scott Weiland was a huge coup for us. You know, it was a big deal. And
one of the standout voices of the 90s for sure. Bill and I got a chance to
we did a concert with him when we were at Q101, one of the Twisted Christmas concerts.
And he was seemingly under the influence at that time. And it had, he had, we had heard reports, oh, he had cleaned up his act. He didn't look, I know he had some struggles, but age of 48, too young to go.
You know, definitely. And when he got here that day, I mean, when I booked him, I was so excited. We started promoting and put it out there, and I couldn't believe the amount of responses from even his own fans saying, well, good luck with that one. You know, the show that I saw recently wasn't very good, and it seemed like he was on something. But, you know, I heard, the, like you said, Wendy, that he did clean up his act. But when he showed up, man, he actually got off the bus earlier in the day, and he literally hung at our bar, like, most of the day and was pounding him. We didn't know what to do, you know. And we were hanging out backstage a little bit before he went on, and, you know, we were trying to have a conversation. And I looked into his eyes, and I'm telling you, and I looked over to one of the guys, reminded me about that this morning. He said, you called it, Ron, because I said, this guy's gone. He's already gone. Mm.
He had battled with so many addictions. He was found dead on his tour bus at the age of 48 on Thursday night, and he died in his sleep. I have to say, that's not a bad way to go, but he sure had a troubled life leading up to that, at his own doing.
You know, when we were watching him, and he really did a good show. I was surprised. There was a few challenges that he had musically, but for the most part, it was a better show than I had expected because of what everybody was telling me. And but again, I'm watching him, just looking at him and just thinking, what a shame. What a shame this talent. What a shame this musician, this genius, really musical genius, as you mentioned, one of the great voices in rock and roll. I'm watching, I'm thinking, you guys, that I can't imagine this guy is going to last another 5 years or so. He's just not going to be here. I was thinking to myself that whole night that this is, it's impossible this guy can last another few years.
Ron, how do you explain, and I remember thinking this years ago when, as I pointed out, we did this holiday concert with him and Stone Temple Pilots. His was a dressing room that they wouldn't let anybody in, and when you'd ask questions, they'd go, you don't want to see Scott right now, believe me. That was the response from his people. So how do you get to somebody who you think to yourself, I don't even know if they could walk a straight line, much less perform for 90 minutes, and then they go up on stage and they do a great show? How's that possible?
Well, you know what? It's like, I call it the Coco Taylor effect. You remember Coco?
Sure.
Yeah.
Blues great, and she was like, you know, way up there in the years, and you go, you know, we do a show with Coco, she'd have her two daughters, you know, walking her up to the stage, and she had a walker, and she was like moving slow, and you're like, holy smokes, this legend, but still this really old lady is going up there to perform, and the music would stop, and she was like John Belushi on stage. And then when the show was over, she'd crumple down, lean over, and get walked off.
So she brought it, man. She could bring it when she wanted to. God bless Coco.
I'm cuckoo for Coco Taylor. I'll tell you that right now, Wendy.
I can't believe you said that.
I had to say it. It was in the script.
But I mean, to answer your question, you know, it's cliche, but it's the power of the music, man. It gets that adrenaline going, and you know, once it stops, you know, they stop. And,
I guess so.
They had some pretty great songs when you think about it. Plush, Interstate Love Song, remember that?
That's the one we just played a little snippet of at the beginning.
Vaseline, one of my favorites. Big Empty. He really was pretty phenomenal, and it's terrible that we lose him at age 48.
Way too soon.
And this sounds terrible. I'm surprised he made it to 48.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't think there's anybody on the planet who knows of Scott who disagrees, and I'm telling you, I looked in his eyes that night, and there was nobody there, man. There was nobody home. It was like looking, I've never seen more. You know, we've all had our experiences with people been under the influence of one thing or another, you know, parties or whatever, and you see them like, oh, but I've never seen a more emptiness in someone when I looked in his eyes. I mean, there was nobody home. Amazing.
Years ago, somebody asked me, because Wendy and I have had the pleasure of introducing or meeting several people in the rock industry, and they said, who's the prototypical rock star? Who have you met that you think to yourself, yep, that's exactly what I think of when I think of a rock star, and Scott Weiland fit that bill, on stage and off.
Yeah, he did have that persona, you know, but and that's actually the sad thing, because again, if you've witnessed him in the good days of STP, if you witnessed him in Velvet Revolver, that was a rock star. That was a guy who took over the stage, who took care of the audience, played to the audience, and it was a party. I mean, you left exhausted from a Velvet Revolver show, you know, or the and what he's been the past few years, you know, it just leaves people, you know, left people a little left to be desired, you know, and it's sad. It's just a sad,
it is sad.
Another sad case. It's another Jim Morrison, you know, the first thing I thought of was Jim Morrison.
Right.
You know, I just, you know, you look at him, you look at the guy, you look at his face, you look at his persona, even how he acted on stage. And for me, all I could think of was Jim Morrison.
Yeah.
And he didn't, you know, he was a member of the 27 Club, was it?
Yep.
With Janice and Jimmy.
Yep.
Well, it's pretty sad.
It was.
Very talented guy, and it's sad. It's sad anytime. It's sad to me before the holidays for his survivors, his family members, because it's a sad thing. Addiction is not a pretty thing. On a lighter note,
I'm sorry, I'm starting to get a little complex because, you know, we did Patti Page's last show, we did Davy Jones' last show, Paul Revere did his last show, and then passed away.
We shouldn't be talking to Ron because we have that same kind of thing. Mostly Bill. He'll mention somebody's name out of the blue, and then the next
day, they're gone
in
a day.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Even Joan Rivers, we did her last show to. So I'm starting to get a little bit of a complex.
That's awful.
I don't want you and Ron Onesti in the same room, please, when I'm anywhere near there.
Hey, Wendy, how you feeling? Yeah, right? I mean, I get in a, I don't know. You okay?
Yeah, why?
Just by association, you got him worried a little bit.
No, you're not here. It doesn't count on the phone, hopefully.
Hopefully. I just want you to know, I mean, I don't know, maybe this is creepy, but just in case anything happens, I want you to know how much I love you and how much you've meant to me in my career and the theater. And
how was Gary Hoey last night? Let's end this uncomfortability.
Hey, I know. No, you know what? You know, Wendy, you're a fan of Gary. He is another just giving guy. And he was rocking it like crazy. When you got a guitarist as powerful as Gary Hoey,
and he's so nice,
he's sweet. And but you get a guy like that with all that talent, with the blues rock feel, doing Christmas carols. If you're a rock and roller, that's freaking Christmas heaven. It really was.
Can I tell you what Christmas heaven is in our family? My son Dylan is going to be 13 on December 13th, his golden birthday. And Ronnie Spector is going to be at the Arcata Theater, and Dylan wants to go see Ronnie Spector again. Last year, I cried during it. My husband cried during it. She did an Amy Winehouse tune along with some Christmas songs. Best show ever. You can go to oshows.com. Got to be there on the 13th, Ron.
Yeah, no, we got you covered, and you know it's really interesting you mention her because again, a legendary performer that fell, you know, under a cloud because of her husband Phil and all that stuff, but she showed up and brought it, and that's why I had to bring her back. I mean, legendary, and when she's doing it, she's got such a great rock and roll, old school Christmas show.
It's so good.
She's doing Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree, and she does the Be My Little Baby thing, the thing she did with Eddie Money. You know, it just makes you feel just warm and fuzzy inside for the holidays.
Well, sorry about Scott Weiland, and good luck in the future. Boy, I'm kind of scared to go out to the Arcata Theater now.
Don't say that. That's terrible.
Dr. Death on
They're
the line
gonna condemn
with
us. St. Charles will put a tape wall around it. You won't be able to get in. That's terrible. We don't want that. Well, Ron, thank you so much. Have a good holiday.
All right, guys. Thank you. Love you guys. Thank you.
Too.
Thank you, Ron. You can go to oshows.com and find out. There is a pretty kick-ass schedule of people that will be there. And if you want to brave the elements and try and come out alive.
You should send him suggestions of bands that you don't want to survive anymore just to see if he books them and if they go away.
There's no one I don't like that much, Phil. I got to be honest with you.
I'll submit a 3-page list.
I know. You we'll have a happens. Lot.
All right. More show coming your way in just a little bit. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Phil F. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. The number 312-981-7200. A couple of texts about Scott Weiland, who was found dead Thursday night on his tour bus.
At 42, 48. 48?
Still,
that's too young.
It is. 630 says Scott had a very disturbing Howard Stern interview. Makes you kind of understand his addiction a little bit more. At least he's finally at peace.
Do you remember, I don't know if you'll remember because it was years ago, but when we were at Q101, they would do these Christmas shows every year. They started out calling them Twisted Christmas, and then for legal reasons could only call them Twisted.
Which
I guess
was
the people who own Christmas actually sued them. I don't know. But
it's ridiculous. Twisted.
Just Twisted. But downstairs in the bowels of the arena where we were performing for this special, you had free rein to go in and out of anybody's dressing room that was performing on the show, except for Stone Temple Pilots. And if you approached that room, they would quickly stop you and they'd say, Mr. Weiland would really appreciate that you not come in. He really needs time by himself. He was the only one that you didn't have access to before the show.
I don't remember that because I was too busy having a cigarette with Sheryl Crow and Jacob Dylan, Bob's son, who was in...
The Wallflowers.
Yes, the One Headlight Band.
The One Headlight Band.
And when we spoke to Jacob Dylan, this is one of the funniest things you have done, and you've done many in your lifetime, but... you know, a lot of times their press people, their publicists will tell us, you know, don't mention this, don't mention that. And they specifically said, do not mention Jacob Dylan's dad, Bob, because they've really, I don't know how their relationship is currently,
right.
But back then, Jacob was not going to talk about it at all.
Correct.
So
right.
You and I were like, you got to mention Bob Dylan, for God's sakes.
Mm-hmm.
He's Bob Dylan's, comes from Bob's loins.
Right, right.
Well, you had a very cute way around it.
We did the whole interview. The interview went well. Jacob seemed to like us. His band seemed to like us, the Wallflowers. And at the very end, we had less than a minute left. I go, look, we got a minute left, and I'm not supposed to ask you this. And the band all kind of held their breath, and he just looked at me like, did nobody from our press department talk to you? And I said, it'd be ridiculous to not mention this. I need to mention this. What's it like to have Greg Allman as a father? And the band laughed very hard, and he laughed very hard.
Jacob.
Everybody was thrilled.
That was one of your best moves ever,
you very
I have
much.
To tell you. That was pretty great.
Thank you.
Someone also suggested, Ron Onesti said it himself from the Arcata Theater, and I'm going to go there forever because it's a great place, but he was kind of worried because he had said Joan Rivers did her last show there. Scott Weiland, my mistake, I thought he was upcoming, but he had been there 12 days ago. And there was someone else he mentioned too, so he's thinking, you know, maybe Ron Onesti's the kiss of death, and who would we want to perform there? Someone suggested Gwen Stefani.
Oh, wow.
I think it was Steve Cochran.
Yeah, I know Steve has some issues with Gwen Stefani, doesn't he?
And so does Miranda Lambert.
Everybody does.
I can't believe that Gwen Stefani drops Gavin Rossdale for Blake Shelton.
And quickly. That was a very fast turnaround, wasn't it?
And not that one's better than the other. It's just very, very different.
Yeah, it is very different. Wendy, here's some news from the world of naked people. Is there a world of naked people? The last issue of Playboy magazine.
I know this.
Do you already know this?
It's the perfect person.
The last issue of Playboy magazine that will feature women without their clothes on is about to hit newsstands. Since the very inception of Playboy back in the 1800s, they've had naked women. Even before there were naked people, Playboy magazine had pictures of naked women in it. So now the last issue is coming out that will have naked women in it. So who will be the cover girl and who will be featured inside?
Since I know, I can't guess, but I've got to tell you, best choice ever. Because I see this person and I think Playboy magazine.
Yep. Ruth Buzzi. Former,
no, it is not.
It's not Ruth Buzzi. They're making a mistake. It's going to be Pamela Anderson, who is going to be the cover girl for a record 14th time. Nobody has come close to that record in the history of Playboy magazine. She will be on the magazine for the 14th time and inside the magazine.
14 pages of pictures, isn't it, or something? It's
is
a
it
huge
that many?
Spread.
All right. Now, this is, as you pointed out, it seems to make sense. She's had a relationship with the magazine for years and years and years. But as a potential buyer, wouldn't a lot of people say, I think I've seen this movie before? How many times do you need to see the same person without their clothes on?
My wife that. Don't say that out loud.
Not her, of course,
well,
but anybody but her. You just kind of go, I've seen this before.
She looks better. She looks beautiful.
She does look good.
And she went through a little dry spell there where she wasn't looking too well, and I know she battled hepatitis C.
Hepatitis D plus.
That is too soon.
I think she's okay.
Yeah,
she's fine now. It went away.
But I saw the pictures.
She's fine.
And I have to tell you, I don't know how big their airbrush was, but boy, she looks really beautiful.
Whoever the airbrush operator is over at Playboy, I believe got a holiday bonus because there was a lot of airbrushing going on over there. But I don't know how old she is. It doesn't say anywhere in the story how old she is.
So Google it. You don't have a computer in front of you?
It doesn't do naked facts. They put a filter on my computer. I can't get any naked facts. She's got to be, can I guess how old she is before you look it up? I'm going to say she's 49 or 50.
Close.
How old?
But no cigar, Monica Lewinsky. Speaking of Playboy. 48.
Oh, I'm very close.
Yeah.
All right.
She is the perfect choice, though. I mean, who else would...
I'm trying to think of who, if it's going to be your last issue,
Living. A living person now, she's the one.
Boy, I guess.
I have to say, up here yesterday, Ryan was talking about it, and he said, guess who it was, and I guessed her immediately.
Did you get... How come,
came
Kim?
To my mind. I just figured she was the ultimate Playboy.
That's it,
model.
Man.
You
the
know,
boobs, the tiny
the
waist.
Whole thing.
The blonde, the bleach blonde hair.
It's the epitome of what they're looking
exactly
for.
That's it. And good for her. She really does look good.
But they started out in the early days of Playboy, they were going for, and this is a direct quote from them, they were going for Girl Next Door. Where do you live where that's the girl next door?
California.
I guess so. I guess. I don't
know. A plastic surgeon's office.
Right. Right. Well, if you live next door to a plastic surgeon, she's the girl next door.
But now, all right, now that Playboy is not going to show nakedity anymore,
right.
What
I'm
is she going
to
do?
I'm going to have to draw my own on. I'm going to have to get a magic marker and just draw it on myself.
Your stick figure women are not going to be that attractive, I got
to
tell you.
I don't think they are. I don't think so. All right, we'll talk to Steve next, find out what's on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Chicago is known for sports and for its sports arenas. Find out more about these legendary venues at the next Chicago Sports Commission Speaker Series event, Sports Venues Enhancing Chicago, Wednesday, December 16th. We'll cover everything from the friendly confines to the Madhouse on Madison. It all starts at 7:30 a.m. at Harry Carey Chicago Sports Museum at Water Tower Place. For information, go to ChicagoSportsCommission.com. The Chicago Sports Commission Speaker Series, presented in part by Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
There's something you don't know, so I'm here to help. Hi, Lou Manfredini. By now, you've probably heard me talking about By the Yard. All their maintenance-free outdoor furniture that never needs painting, lasts a lifetime, and is made in Minnesota. But what you don't know is what to give those hard-to-buy-for folks this Christmas. The answer is By the Yard furniture or a By the Yard gift card. It's perfect. And listen to this. For every $100 you spend at By the Yard, you'll get free shipping and a free $15 By the Yard gift card. Keep that $15 for yourself and use it during By the Yard's huge spring sale or give them a bigger gift. And the other cool thing is, when you get them a By the Yard gift card, they choose exactly what they want. I'm telling you, it's the perfect gift. And remember, for every $100 you spend, you get another $15 for free. Get By the Yard gift cards at buytheyard.net.
Bill is being a martyr.
I don't think I'm being a martyr. Do you? I don't think I am.
You didn't have time to get lunch. I can honestly go without eating and have. You seem to feed that machine every few hours.
That's
you get
not
hangry,
true.
Bill?
No, never. I don't.
You're against cafeteria food. It's cafeteria Greek chicken today, and it's very good.
It doesn't look good. It does not look
good.
Is
he a food snob?
He is a food snob, but he had nothing to eat, and I'm offering him two breasts.
I had some space food sticks.
You did not.
And some Tang. Yes, I did.
No,
space
you didn't.
Food sticks and Tang.
Yeah, in your dream that you control because you're
Mickey
a lucid
Rooney
dreamer.
Tried to steal it from me.
Someone explained that. Bill had a crazy dream about Mickey Rooney trying to tunnel into his house and steal your stuff and harm your family.
That's right. I had it twice this week.
I think I may
have figured it out too, but what did a listener say?
A listener suggested, you know, he played Santa Claus in these Rankin Bass things, and Santa Claus sneaks into your house. Although he doesn't take things or harm your family.
No, he does good things.
But he sneaks in.
Here's my explanation for it, and for people who missed the show yesterday, at about this time I explained that twice I've had the nightmare this week that Mickey Rooney, was trying to tunnel from my front yard underneath my house into my house to harm my family and steal my things. And I couldn't figure out why. This may be the reason. Can I tell you really quick? When I was on vacation a few weeks ago, I read Norman Lear's book called This Too I Get to Experience. And he tells the story about how when they were casting for the role of Archie Bunker, the network wanted them to hire Mickey Rooney to play Archie Bunker. And he called Mickey Rooney and he gave him the pitch. He goes, Mick, listen to this. I want you to play this guy. Now, you got to keep in mind, the guy is not very likable and he's a bigot. And he doesn't get along with his family. And that was the sales pitch. And Mickey Rooney doesn't say anything. And after a long silence, he goes, here's what you need to do. Make him a war veteran and blind.
Oh my God!
And he ended up not getting the role.
Wonder why?
But somewhere in the back of my head, that story's been lingering for a few days. So maybe that's why.
Why does that make him want to burrow under your house and injure you?
That remains to be explained.
Somebody suggested also yesterday via text that he resembles Morocco Mole, the cartoon
Morocco Mole, a little bit.
A little bit, and maybe that's.
I don't know. Maybe
a mole would burrow under your house.
Yeah, that's possible. I don't know. I didn't have the dream last night. Stuart Granger tried to steal my bike yesterday. It's All Stars from the 1940s coming back to take my things. Did you by any chance see the video? I saw this last night on the Channel 5 News, and then I watched it again later on because it was so disturbing to me. It's a videotape of a little kid, I would say 2, maybe 3 years old, smoking the marijuana. Did you see this videotape?
No.
I'm going to read you the story. Kevin, you watched it, right? You saw it this morning. All right.
For medical reasons?
No. No.
Just blowing a big dude?
Some guy, and it's not really explained in the video, some guy gives him, and he seems to be very adept at it. He seems to know exactly what he's doing.
Was it the smoking baby? Remember that smoking baby from
not
a
the smoking
different
baby.
Country? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do remember
he was a heavy-set kid who would be heavier if he gave it up. That's why he keeps smoking.
True. Yeah, no, it's not the smoking baby. This is a kid, a local kid, because the story is, well, I'll read you the story just so you know the background of this. Police said on Thursday that they're investigating a video that purports to show a toddler smoking marijuana. It doesn't purport to show it. I saw the video. It's a kid. It's a little kid smoking marijuana. Anti-violence activist Andrew Holmes was on the West Side on Wednesday talking to a family. And then the toddler, whose head, hands, and feet were found in the Garfield Park Lagoon. Oh, that's the family he was talking to. At the time he was talking to the family, a woman approached him and had this video. Here's what he said. She said that she didn't want to bring it to the police by herself, but when she saw it, she said, oh my God, this needs to be reported. This according to DNA Info. The video appears to show a young child sitting in a chair, smoking a blunt, a cigar filled with marijuana, not Mariah.
A cigar filled with it?
That's what it says. As a man is heard off screen saying,
I gotta teach that kid how to smoke.
Wendy, this is a little kid. Saying, inhale it. He's telling the kid this in the video. You can see him saying this. Holmes filed a report with Area South detectives whose special victims unit is now investigating the video, according to Officer Anna Pacheco, a Chicago police spokesperson. First and foremost, we need to identify this child and give him help ASAP, Holmes said. We need to step in right now before he starts to develop an addiction or behavioral problems.
Give him some Doritos, too.
All right. That would be a side dish, I guess, for the baby.
The taco ones, the original taco flavors, those are the best.
Is that the best in this situation? But when you see this, you say to yourself, are you watching it right now? How disturbing is this to see a little kid? How old would you say this kid is? Three? Two or three?
Two.
2 years old.
He's still in diapers.
Smoking the evil weed.
Oh, they've blurred it out.
For your protection.
I want to see. That's.
That's what?
That does not look like a cigar.
Well, I think what they were doing there was explaining, and truth be told, I need an explanation on this. What exactly?
That looks like an apple bong.
Is that what it is?
You can make it, you know, you just take a pencil and you make a hole on the top and one on the side and you can make an apple bong or bowl, I guess.
If this continues, this kid is going to start watching Cheech and Chong films, mark my words.
You guys, it looks like he's eating a steaming piece of pizza because
it's all blurred out.
The one I saw, you could actually see the...
You saw smoke coming out of
it.
Yeah,
and
you saw him laughing at things that weren't funny. Thinking the Grateful Dead should do one more show.
What the hell is wrong with people? I hate when people like blow some weed in a dog's face, and now you're getting a kid to smoke. Now I can see it.
See what I mean?
They're blurring out his face, but it looked like a piece of pizza for a while.
The worst part
that
to
was
me
later
was the guy asking for it back. Oh yeah, let me get that back.
Right,
yeah,
he wants to share. You know how the kids are with the sharing of the marijuana.
How about when I was hypnotized and I did a fake joint and I passed it back to. Who was that?
The hypnotist.
Chris.
I don't remember Chris's last name, but the guy who hypnotized him.
Yeah.
Right. Yes, I remember that. So
this
isn't
Chris
that
Jones.
Disturbing
that
to see
him.
That? It's awful, isn't it?
That's disgusting.
Do we even put this on Facebook, or is it too disturbing for
you
the Facebook?
You can have people find it by themselves. Right. I don't want to.
It's too dirty for Facebook.
Phil Ponce has, there's something on NBC Chicago. You can go all over. It's all over. I just put smoking toddler, and it was the first thing
that
popped
up. That's what shows
up.
Right. And that's going on right here in our city.
Someone from 815 says that video is 4 years old. Saw it on a news program back then.
I think that's 4 years ago was about the time of the smoking kid that you're talking about. Some kid on an island somewhere, a slightly heavy set young man. Would you agree with me?
Yes.
Very heavy. He's just he's sitting on a picnic table.
Having a cigarette. He was up to a couple packs a day, I think. It's not funny. It sounds funny.
Right.
It sounds like video. Does The Onion have a video department?
They do, but that's a whole separate entity. These were legit.
Oh, a blunt is a hollowed out cigarillo filled with weed and closed back up. I've never smoked a blunt. Proud to say. A Swisher Sweet I have.
Right. And Emily Blunt is smoking, but that's separate. We got to keep these things separate.
All right. Well, allegedly, this video is 4 years old. Saw it on a news program back then. According to 815, 708 says, I knew Wendy is evil.
Based on what?
I don't know.
I'm not disagreeing. I'm just asking based on what.
One of the many things I said, you're just figuring that out today. And really, Bill's the evil one.
I'm not. I'm not evil.
This is really sad.
It's awful.
Just, you can Google smoking toddler, and it's the first thing that pops up. And he looks, maybe three or four.
Two or three, yeah, somewhere in there.
But wearing diapers, just sitting in the little kid chair at a little kid picnic table, doing what big kids do.
It's not good.
It's terrible.
It's not good. All right, we'll take a quick break. We have a full show for you ahead. D.B. Sweeney, fine actor. He's appearing in the film Chi-Raq.
Opens tonight.
It's in theaters now. So he'll be with us in just a little bit. Stick around. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
I'm not talking to you because you won't eat my chicken breast.
I'm going to have something later. I'm building up a big hunger for later.
Why don't we call D.B. Sweeney and see if he'll bring you up something on his way in?
D.B. Oh. What?
He's already here.
Is he already here?
He would have brought you something.
Would it kill
him
to run across the street and get me some Panda Express? Is an actor too important to just run over? What is it, 150 yards away?
I'm going to say yeah.
Too busy to get me some walnut shrimp?
He's got things going on, Bill.
All right. Earlier in part one of our show, we were discussing the fact that Playboy magazine is putting out their final edition to include women without their clothes on. Playboy magazine was built on the theory that we'll put out a magazine and it'll have naked ladies in it and the world will be a better place. And now they've decided that because of the internet, I guess there's a website, Kevin was telling me, there's a website on the internet where there's pictures of naked ladies. So
yeah,
Playboy
all
magazine,
websites.
Yes.
That is the entire internet, pretty much.
I'm telling you,
and
way
cats.
To play like Mr. Innocent.
I was shocked. Kevin told me about it, and I'm like, well, they must close at 10 o'clock, right? And he goes, nope, 24 hours a day.
I've been thrown under the bus.
Anytime. Look, there's Gary McCarthy. All right, so you and I were discussing this. With this being their final issue with naked women, who better suited to being that final naked lady in Playboy magazine than Pamela Anderson? And we were all coming up with names. Steve Bertrand threw out a couple names. You threw out a couple names.
Can we throw out a name, Steve Bertrand? We have to throw it to Steve Bertrand. There is some special
news. Well, we have
news.
A little time here. But, you know, we're continuing to follow the situation in San Bernardino, and the FBI has been talking about it. And there was a big question yesterday. You know, President Obama was asked, is this a terror event, a terrorist attack? And he said it might be. It might be workplace connected. It might be some sort of combination of both. And there's been this sort of great debate over whether or not this indeed has been a terror attack in the United States. And we're getting word now that the FBI has considered all the evidence they have so far, and they are ready to say that indeed it was a terrorism attack.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Daria Albing. Our federal agents now say they are investigating this week's attack in San Bernardino, California, as an act of terrorism. This based on some of the most recent developments in the case. We learned today that the woman involved, the shooter, Tashfeen Malik, had pledged her allegiance to ISIS just before the shootings began. Her husband, the other gunman, Syed Farouk, had visited Saudi Arabia twice, once in 2013 and once in 2014. Not long ago today, the landlords let reporters have the run of the home that the couple was renting in Redlands, California. And among the things that reporters say they saw, clothing, food, documents, and toys and furniture for the couple's six-month-old baby girl. Once again, the FBI saying that the attack in San Bernardino, California, which left 14 people dead, is being investigated as an act of terrorism. I'm Daria Albinger, and this is a special report from ABC News.
So the FBI talking about that, and they are continuing to give a statement, a briefing to reporters, and we'll have much more on that coming up at 1:30, 2 o'clock, and throughout the afternoon. Bill and Wendy.
Steve, thanks so much. All right, do we have time to just quickly close this out?
How do you go back to Pamela Anderson from that?
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out, if it's worth even trying to bridge that. It's impossible, isn't it?
I just did. You're welcome.
It's impossible. I don't know how you did it. All right, so my point is...
she has 2 points.
Thank you for reminding me. Pamela Anderson has been in Playboy magazine. She's been the cover girl for 14 times. Nobody can even count how many times she's been in Playboy magazine. But we were all trying to figure out who's better suited to being in that last issue.
And I think no one. I think she's the perfect fit.
Well, one of the names that I threw out there was Amy Schumer. And then everybody went, well, she wouldn't be in Playboy magazine. But then I pointed out she's currently in the calendar that Pirelli puts out every
right.
year. And she doesn't have any clothes on in it. Or actually, she has her underpants are on. But that's it. And she's covered up for the most part. But they're getting a lot of flack for this because she looks like a real person. She doesn't look like a cover model.
No, but that I have seen her in a better light, let's just say. I like Amy Schumer. I think she's hysterical.
Yeah.
I think she looks fantastic.
Yeah.
I know she is not a stick figure,
mm-hmm.
and nor am I. That's mm-hmm. why I relate to her. I just, you could find a better way to show that she's not a stick figure. Because even Kate Moss, when she leans over, will have her skin ripple.
There's a little bit of roll in the stomach area.
Not right. that it's fat. It's called skin.
Yeah. So you could pose somebody so that's not as apparent.
Well, I know that's her point, and that's what she's trying to make.
It is.
But there's a way to make that point that you're not a stick figure without... I just think I've seen more flattering pictures.
Yeah.
And if she wanted to really go for it and be unflattering, then don't have makeup on, have your hair all messed up.
But what their goal in this...
And chocolate pudding on your leg.
Oh. Their goal in this, though, is to say... Look, we're not going for a supermodel look. We're going for somebody who is a celebrity but looks like most people.
Who's
right?
What's the calendar for?
It's Pirelli.
What does that mean to you?
I think of Pirelli tires.
Okay.
But I don't know if they're the same company, are they?
Oh, I get it. Tires, because you're seeing little rolls.
Is that what it is?
I don't know.
I think that's separate.
Because Dove did that whole campaign where real women,
right.
and I thought that was fantastic.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was very well done.
But it's just, I think Amy's great, and I just think that there could have been a better pose. I know she's trying to show that, but...
But like I said, though, I think their point of this was to be as non-flattering. They weren't going to go overboard.
Well, you could go way more.
But they didn't. I don't think they wanted to go more overboard. They just wanted to go, look, we're doing this calendar, and everybody looks like people you know. They're approachable women.
Is she wearing high heels with the underpants?
She is wearing high heels with her underpants.
That's every person?
That's hard to match.
You see, your neighbor looks like that?
Yes.
Yes. You have a good telescope.
Yes.
Bill, did you find that on the one website?
Yeah, that's on the website that features women without their clothes on the internet.
I hope D.B. Sweeney hasn't gotten too embarrassed and left.
My neighbor, Mr. Broslin, does wear high heels.
Broslin, I get it.
I don't understand. All right, a quick break, and then D.B. Sweeney will be in. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder live from the Allstate Showcase Studio here on 720 WGN. Everything is coming full circle right now. Watching the Hawks game the other night, and I see this guy in the shoot the puck competition who's pretty doggone good at getting the puck in the hole.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out to be D.B. Sweeney. So I'm thinking, look at this guy. He played Shoeless Joe. He's an athlete. Maybe we should have him in the studio. And it just so happens he is also in Chirac, which officially opens today, playing Mayor McLeod. And now look, D.B. Sweeney's in the studio.
Thank you so much for having me. You guys have about the best piece of real estate in Chicago.
Isn't
right?
it
pretty
great?
Good view, isn't it? It's a pretty good view. How exciting. I know what a...
I want to talk shoot the puck.
Go on, do shoot the puck.
I couldn't believe how good you were. Is this because of your role as Doug Dorsey, where you were Olympic hockey player turned figure skater? Did that help you make that shot?
You know, it's a little bit of a tricky thing. Even people that play hockey, you get out there and they put you on a mat. And you never really have a hockey stick in your hand when you're on a mat. So that part is a little bit of an adjustment. I think
and
I
you
a lot
switched
of people,
sticks. We noticed that.
Yeah, that was a little inside joke to my buddy Pat Foley. He and I had to play golf a few times and you know, checking the wind, changing clubs. So
he said
I don't
that.
Know how many people. Oh, did he say
he
it?
Did
oh,
say
good,
it.
Good.
It was pretty funny.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and you got the first one, I say went in, but I don't know if it went completely through.
This is where we need video review and shoot the puck. I mean, you can't have these things decided by, you know, by right. human error. It's so right. I thought it was in, too. But,
I did, too. Yeah. Next one, right through the hole.
I figured, yeah, make no doubt on the next one.
But if the Hawks are down a winger, you don't live that far away. They could call you. You'd show up in time.
You know, that's why I wore number 65. I feel like I could serve that role, you know, sort of the old man version of that role. Just sort of run around, hit people, and stay in the way.
I just bought Shaw's jersey for my 13-year-old for his birthday yesterday at the Blackhawks store. So Shaw's was not a bad one to go with.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. You can't really go wrong with 19 or 88 or number 2.
81.
There's a lot of numbers.
Rosa.
I mean, it's, we got a lot.
They got more stars than I think any other team in the NHL, that and appealing stars.
Yes.
And, you know, Kane's doing right now, obviously, is historic.
Diamond
but all those
on the ice.
How about that, huh?
He's up to 21, beat Bobby Hall now.
Tied Bobby Hall.
Yeah. Eddie O was not, I mean, he was actually cordial about it when he said that, you know, okay, yeah, he beat my record.
You know, the thing about having a record like that is people don't really talk about it that much until somebody gets close to it.
You're
so,
right.
So I didn't even realize it. You know, Eddie had a great career, and he's got a great career now. So, but the sky's the limit for Kaner, because I felt like that goal that night against Minnesota was the lucky one that you need in a streak like that.
Right.
I mean, he kind of fanned on the shot, and it still went in.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the kind of one where if you didn't get one that night, he could go another 11 or 12 games now, and then he would have two great streaks. But I don't know. I don't think he's going to catch Gretzky at 51. But
51.
Don't never say never.
Never say never, 51. Right? You never know. Because Taves is actually not hot. If Taves got hot on the power play, Kaner could get some points that way.
Right,
you know? So,
right.
You know, I wouldn't bet against him.
And Gretzky has, if you look at the all-time streaks for points, he has 3 out of the top 4. Wayne Gretzky by himself.
It's nuts when you look at his stats. I mean, I was looking at Ovechkin recently because, you know, people say, are any of Gretzky's records touchable? And the goals record, if Ovechkin stays at the level he's at for the next 8 years or 9 years, he's going to get close to Gretzky's goals.
Mm-hmm.
But Gretzky has more assists than anybody else has points. So it's kind of an amazing thing.
I don't think Gretzky is a human. I think he's been cloned and sent from you know, some other planet.
Oh,
very possibly.
That's an interesting
theory.
Possibly. You are an actor because of a sports injury, aren't you?
Well, I dreamed, like many kids in America, of playing baseball, and my dream was to play left field for the Boston Red Sox, and that didn't work out, so I switched over to acting, and I'm glad I don't know that I ever would have gotten to the big leagues, and so I kind of got near the big leagues here in showbiz, so I think maybe I made the right call.
So knowing how much you wanted to be a baseball player, then you're cast as Shoeless Joe and 8 Men Out, what was that like? How exciting was that for you?
That was a great, great opportunity, because at that time, the funny thing is they had asked me to do Bull Durham to play the Nuke LaLoosh and to play Shoeless Joe at the same time. I actually got the offer for 8 Men Out first, and I started learning how to hit lefty, and then they offered me the Bull Durham thing, and I thought, oh, man, that's going to be great. And those two movies, I think, are the first two movies, because I thought Kevin Costner was tremendous.
He was great.
He was so believable. I mean, a great swing. He looked like a catcher. He had everything down pat. I think he's tremendous. But before that, you had Pride of the Yankees. You had the movie with De Niro and Michael Moriarty, Bang the Drum Slowly.
Yeah.
And those guys, Gary Cooper and De Niro, there's no better actors, but they're terrible baseball players. And
you're leaving somebody out, Anthony Perkins and Fear Strikes
Perkins.
Out.
I mean, this is
not that good.
Yeah, and so the bar was low.
Yeah.
And I thought that for all the baseball fans that used to complain about that stuff, here's a moment where I could be the first guy to really be believable.
Yeah.
And so that was really fun and exciting. And, of course, Costner's movie came out first, and he beat me to the punch. But it's, you know, it was still, I'm very proud to have been in 8 Men Out, and there's so many great associations for me now living in Chicago.
Such a great movie, really.
All right, so explain something to me. I know that the trailer came out for Chi-Raq. I watched it. I know it's based on that play, which I always forget. And I know
Lysistrata.
Thank you. And so I was kind of surprised when I first saw the trailer, because I thought, this is not what I expected. But I am really intrigued, and I want to see this. We talked to Harry Lennox yesterday, who was explaining, you know, life goes on despite all the bad stuff that's going on in the city. They had the red carpet premiere, but now today is the day where it opens
in theaters everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah, Harry actually, and I have all my scenes with Harry, and he, what a great guy and great actor, and anybody that watches The Blacklist or any Chicago theater fans already know that, but, you know, nationally, he's got a higher profile than for many years he had by being a local Chicago guy, and he plays the police commissioner, and I play the mayor, and we're both sort of political opportunists, and our function in the story is to be a little bit of comic relief, which you need when you have such a heavy subject.
Sure.
And I, you know, I've said before that I thought the controversy over the title was a fake one because, you know, I mean, the real obscenity is the murders that happen every day and every weekend, especially in the summer. You know, it heats up and the rates go, the murder rates go even higher. But, you know, the obscenity is that we haven't done something to take care of this violence.
Right.
And it's very localized in certain neighborhoods. And so whether or not you call it Chi-Rac or whether you call it Bloody Chicago, whatever you want to call it, the reality is that the murder rate here is disproportionate to the population, and it's a problem.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know the answer. I don't know anybody knows the answer or if there is a simple answer. But let's talk about it. Let's try to figure out how to save some lives somehow.
But when you say the controversy over the title may have been made up, who would have benefited from that? Only the movie company would have benefited,
well,
really.
No, I mean, I think there's certain aldermen that got their name in the paper that,
oh,
that were having a
that.
Slow week, you
yeah.
know, and you know, and I think obviously Mayor Emanuel, I think, misplayed this terribly because he could certainly, if he had gotten behind this thing and this week, you know, if he had been getting some good gloss from Spike Lee and company,
yeah.
You know, and
could have helped
him. But, you know, I mean, that's just the way things go. I think that people using the film incentives, especially as political, you know, gamesmanship is a really bad thing for Chicago actors and directors and producers and the city. You know, bringing movies into your town or into your state is one of the few clean industries, and it's a completely a net positive because
sure.
we shot in the Armory on the south side, and I guarantee you 3 years from now people are going to fly into Chicago. Spike Lee fans are going to fly in here and say, let's go see the Armory.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to buy a plane ticket, they're going to buy a hotel room, they're going to go down there, they're going to have lunch somewhere on the south side.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to, you know, and it's just a net economic positive. So I think anytime people play politics with that and say it's you know, welfare for millionaires, they're misreading the whole thing, because Spike Lee came down here and hired 200 people, at least 100 of them on the south side of Chicago. These aldermen bitching about the title of the movie, how many jobs did they create on the south side last summer?
Right.
So I think it was really a fake opportunistic controversy.
And to say it gives Chicago a bad name, we've already got that bad name. It's not like this is going to change anyone else's mind.
The murder rates are the murder rates, and it's a tragedy, and that's the real issue that people should focus on, not what Spike Lee wants to call his movie.
What was the mood on the set?
You know, I did one other movie with Spike called The Miracle of St. Anna. We were in Tuscany, Italy for a month, and that was sort of wonderful. And Spike was trying to, you know, he's a very focused guy, and he wanted to call attention to the service of the Buffalo Soldiers in World War II, which is an undertold story, and so that was his intention there. But in this case, he was very much about, we're going to call attention to this problem. And every day we'd get our call sheet, you know, the marching orders for filming for the day. And it would have the tally of the day before's murders and woundings and the shootings. And so there was very much a sense of like, we're going to try and do something good here, which is a very dangerous thing when you're in the movie business. Cause like they say, if you want to send a message, call Western Union, you know, don't make a movie.
Yeah.
And so there was a little bit of a leeriness about that, but Spike could, you know, Spike's a world-class director. He could be directing Hunger Games Part 5 or, you know, but he's, you know, he's very committed to, you know, social justice. And he wanted to do some good.
And are you proud to be part of this? Are you honored to be a part of this Chi-Rac movie?
I really am excited. You know, first of all, I like working with Spike, but to be a, you know, a new Chicago resident, to be picked to play the mayor of Chicago, I mean, I know it doesn't seem like such an honor this week, but in general, you know, I can't wait. You know, when I played Shoeless Joe Jackson in Eight Men Out, I'd go to the cell and people would send me beers, and the vendor would say that from the people of the section over, say Shoeless Joe doesn't pay for beer at the cell. So
well, that's because Sox fans are a lot more friendly than the Cubs fans.
I think it's true. I think, and it costs you. You got to dig a little deeper if you live on the South Side. That $9 for a beer, I mean, that's a real gift.
Sure,
but I can't wait to see what I'm going to get now as the mayor of Chicago. I mean, I think I should. There's probably going to be a limo for me when
there
I go
will definitely
outside.
Be a limo for you.
Gibson's, I think, no longer charges me. I was looking over the various perks that I'm going to get.
You're going to get some perks, and we've ordered a bus for you to throw people under, because that happens a lot if you're the mayor.
I'm going to need that.
When you get a part, DB, all of a sudden you're cast as something, be it a baseball player or a mayor. What's your next move? What sort of research do you do?
Well, this is an interesting one because I thought if I'm being hired to be the mayor of Chicago, you know, I don't look a lot like Mayor Emanuel. That's not really the vibe I throw up. You'd hire another actor if you were trying to do that. So I thought, well, if Spike's got me in mind, maybe I'm kind of in the Daly family tree somewhere that I'm more of a, you know, I'd be a, kind of a man of the people, guy who loves Chicago. And
a regular guy.
Regular
more,
Joe, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I started thinking that way, and I started, you know, trying to think, well, how would he talk? You know, maybe he would talk a little bit more like, you know, he was a guy, had a job here, you know, he's a guy like that. And then I get on the set, and I find out he's hired the most beautiful African-American woman to play my wife in the story. And I thought, well, that's an interesting nuance. I mean, that means this character, when he got elected, he probably went into the churches on the South Side. He probably had a little bit of street cred that he was able to, you know, not exactly be like Mayor de Blasio in New York, but a little bit, you know, that he could, I don't know, he knows the moves of a Father Flager or a Reverend Wright, or, you know, he knows some of those kind of cadences. So I changed the way I was talking, and it was kind of fun that Spike was whatever I wanted to do. He didn't say do whatever you want, but he was try whatever you want, and then he would hone it. So he's very collaborative that way.
That's really cool. We're talking to D.B. Sweeney, plays Mayor McLeod in Chi-Raq, opens theaters everywhere today. You can go to his website, dbsweeney.com. That's Sweeney, E-Y, at the end. We're going to take a quick break and be back. 312-981-7200. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. You know, you're going to need some cheap sunglasses today. That's the DJ and me coming out because it is so sunny. In fact, D.B. Sweeney is here in the Allstate Showcase studio, and the sun is coming through the window.
You're disrobing.
Put your shades on.
You're taking your clothes off.
I need some sunscreen. This is who knows Chicago in December.
Wendy just got a stack of singles. I don't know what's going to happen in here now, but you started taking your shirt off.
She's
got to
reciprocate. I ate the breasts, you know. Right,
you didn't. My breasts are just sitting here. No one will have my breasts. You needed to listen to
that. Don't explain it.
I'm not. I know.
Not to explain it.
All right. D.B. Sweeney is in the studio with us. Again, just watching the Hawks game, and you do such a good job shooting the puck. We thought, you know, let's have him on. You live relatively close.
Yeah, I do. I moved here about a little less than 3 years ago. I have a son who's 14, a daughter who's 11, and, you know, I just wanted to get him out of L.A. And, you know, there's good things about L.A., but I don't know. I love the Midwest, and I've always loved coming to Chicago and visiting. I'm from New York, and I think I'm one of the only New Yorkers who's going to say that Chicago is better than New York by a mile.
Say that over and over again.
Yeah.
I just keep saying that.
I mean, New York's great if you got a gazillion dollars and you're an expert in everything, and you know, and you want to win every argument. That's a great place to be. So, but Chicago, I love it. You know, as soon as the first week we came here, you know, I'd go to my son plays hockey, and we go to the rink, and all his teammates would come over and say, you know, to my wife, you know, hello, Mrs. Sweeney, and a different level of respect.
Sure.
And, you know, the Midwestern values are still holding. So that was our biggest reason for coming here. And also, I want to work in the Chicago theater. I mean, it's the best actor city in America. I mean, I don't care what L.A.
says. It is, isn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, Steppenwolf, there's no better theater than Goodman. There's so many Victory Gardens.
Oh, it's on and on.
You know, and so, I haven't had a chance yet to do that because thankfully I've been really busy with movies and TV. But that was one of my goals, too, is to get involved in that scene here because, like Harry Lennox in Chi-Raq, I mean, there's no better actors than Chicago.
Yep.
Okay, so you say Chi-Raq, which we're talking about, opens in theaters today, and D.B. Sweeney plays Mayor McLeod. And what else do you have coming out? A couple of new things.
Yeah, you know, I'm really excited that this movie I did called Heist, it was called Bus 657, and that's the international title now, and it's called Heist. It's with Robert De Niro and Dave Bautista and Morris Chestnut.
Would we know Robert De Niro from, D.B.? What has he been in before?
You know what? I can't really remember. He's sort of
But he's worked before.
He was in that movie called The Intern, I think, wasn't he?
Intern.
You'd know him best from that.
I believe so, and I think he carried Ben Stiller's bags a couple times.
Right.
So,
I know who he is.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, but this is one of those movies where the cast, it's a script that was rewritten by a friend of mine who was an Army veteran named Max Adams. And he called me up and said, I want you to be a part of this. And I said, great. And so we go down to Mobile, Alabama. And there's a lot of really great people from, you know, Gina Carano shows up and Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Oh, wow.
And
oh,
so everybody wants to be in a movie with De Niro.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a B movie that got wildly elevated. And then the director's this guy, Scott Mann, who I guarantee is going to be huge.
Big
He's
name
an English,
coming.
English guy, young guy, and he took this thing and just elevated it. So I'm the bus driver. They rip off De Niro's casino on a riverboat. Their getaway driver runs away because he's terrified of De Niro's henchmen, Morris Chestnut, and the other guys coming with machine guns.
Yeah.
And they have no getaway car, so they hijack a city bus, and yours truly is the bus driver.
Cool.
So it's a fun movie. It's like a popcorn movie. It's very different than Chi-Raq. You know, it's just like it's kind of an entertaining movie that you may have seen something similar in the past, but it's so well done. And it's vintage De Niro. That's the surprising thing. I thought he was just walking through for a paycheck and, you know, I want to get my picture made with him. And
not that guy. But is there ever a time, and maybe it's Robert De Niro, maybe it's somebody else, that you, like, even for a split second, you go, I'm in a movie with Robert De Niro. Does that happen to you? Do you get a little intimidated ever?
You know, I had one scene I was supposed to be in with him, and it didn't get, end up getting filmed because they would have had to pay, I think they were paying him $1 million a day, and they would have had to pay him $3 million to wait and do that scene. Somebody did the math, and he got on a plane.
Wow.
And so I didn't get my scene with Robert De Niro. But, yeah, I mean, I was excited to be with him. I mean, when I was with Robert Duvall in Lonesome Dove, I remember daily looking across at him and thinking, I'm in a movie with Robert Duvall. And, you know, so I've been really blessed. And James Earl Jones in, in Gardens of Stone. And, you know, there's been, you know, Christopher Lloyd in Eight Men Out. You know, sort of like, you know, there's been guys that, that I've worked with where, I definitely have that moment. And that's when lunch is the best part of the day, when it's like, oh, I got to get there early so I can get a seat next to, you know, Robert Duvall.
That's so funny.
So, yeah, I mean, it's great. I mean, there's definitely, you know, working with your heroes. And I can't forget James Garner in Fire in the Sky. I mean,
isn't he great?
He was the greatest man. I mean, he just... He showed me and Robert Patrick and Peter Berg, and we'd go out and go golfing with him, and he was 70-some-odd years old, and he'd just kick our butt on the golf course and then pretend like he was lucky.
Really?
I mean, he was just such a gentleman, and people would come over and want to get their picture made with him, and he just, and just everything about that guy was like, oh, man, that's a Hollywood I want to be a part of, is James Garner's Hollywood.
He was smooth over everything,
he really was.
So talented. What a great actor, and just a great, great man.
And the reason so many actors can survive today is because of James Garner, because he changed the laws when it came to repeats and reruns. He was the first one to say, hey, I need to get a cut of that. And then all of a sudden, after
and
said,
know that.
Yeah, it's because of him.
Residuals and all that.
Yeah,
well, it's good
all
for
based
him.
On him.
Another reason to be grateful.
Yeah. All right, so Heist is currently video on demand, VOD.
Yeah, I got one more. Extraction with Bruce Willis comes out December 18th, and that's a CIA movie. It's like Taken Light, and you know, Kellan Lutz is in it, and again, Gina Carano's in that one. And, you know, it's another one of these popcorn movies, and, you know, I guess you'd call it a B movie we're trying to elevate. And, you know, Bruce Willis, it's fun to be in a movie with him. I play his best friend, and, you know, I got some secrets in my character, so it's a good role, and I haven't seen the movie yet, but I hope it turned out good. The director did a great job.
And when's that coming out?
December 18th.
Wow, you've got all this stuff happening.
Yeah, it's a busy Christmas season. So,
you deserve it.
Santa's going to be good to your family.
I hope so.
Great to finally see you. Great to meet you. Continued success. Chirac, as we pointed out, is in theaters starting today, and several other movies coming down the pike, all the ones you just mentioned. DB, keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
Yeah, come visit us anytime. We'll set up a little shoot the puck for you here in the studio.
I'm ready.
Thank you so much. It's Bill and Wendy, and we've got news next, 720 WGN.
That D.B. Sweeney is a horrible man. I did not like him at all.
I'm just watching you guys on the monitor talk about a crush.
Yeah.
He's a great guy.
Horrible human being.
I'm having a hot flash. I don't know if it's related.
You know, he was here about, I bet, 25 years ago. I don't know if he brought this up with Kiefer Sutherland. They were in a movie that was set like in Cabrini Green, a high school basketball movie.
What would that have been? I'm trying to think of what
outdoor,
that could have been.
I should have brought it up when he was there, but it was an outdoor movie. They shot in Cabrini Green, but it was about basketball, sort of.
And it's he and Kiefer Sutherland.
They were both in the studio to talk to Roy Leonard.
Yeah.
And it would have been the late 80s. Yeah.
I'm quickly scanning. Are you doing the same, Wendy? I'm going through IMDb to see what that possibly could have been.
I'm sorry I didn't bring it up earlier, but...
Bring it up now. You have a computer in front of you, too. Why do you people do this? You bring stuff up when you can just search it yourself.
I got titles from that
Spencer
era.
Spencer for Hire?
Is it Dinosaur?
Underdogs?
Is it Underdogs?
Doesn't sound familiar, but maybe. I don't remember. But
CSI Miami?
No. It was a movie.
Brother
it
Bear?
Heaven is a Playground?
There you go.
Is it? Oh, I remember Heaven is a Playground.
Yeah.
I remember that.
A coach and a lawyer team up to provide incentives for an urban high school basketball team to stay out of trouble.
There you go.
Cast. I don't see D.B. Sweeney.
Well, he was there.
Or
maybe he
Kiefer
was
Sutherland.
Uncredited.
Well, maybe it wasn't that movie then, but it was something like that.
Maybe they saw that movie.
I will never forget it.
It's possible they just
remember
went to
it
see
like it.
It
was yesterday.
Well, that's all right.
We are going to talk to Lisa Lampanelli. She is going to be on with us. She was supposed to be on with us yesterday, and I hope everything's okay with her dog.
There was a dog emergency, and they called in Steve Dale. That's how serious this was. Steve Dale was called in. He was medevaced in.
No, don't say that. And I probably shouldn't have said that on the air because, you know, when you have pet issues, sometimes those things don't turn out. Like, I'm going to ask her how her dog or cat or goldfish is, and what if it's something terrible?
We should have Kevin ask in advance just so it plays well on the air.
He can be the filter?
Yeah. And then if something terrible happened, Kevin will look bad. You'll be okay.
Okay.
All right, we'll do that.
There's that bus again.
Right. That bus has been very busy the last couple of days.
The wheels on the bus, or the people on yes. the bus go under it.
All the time.
Under it.
Wendy, I found this. There are things that we do as Americans that if we are to travel abroad, to travel to other countries, we will be considered rude. Can I tell you some of these?
Please do.
I know that maybe in the future you may travel around the globe. Steve already does. Steve goes from country to country all the time. What I'm doing here is helping people, should they be going to other countries, to know that if you do these things in other countries, it's considered rude. For instance, tipping. Now, that seems basic, doesn't it? But here's what it says. A contentious issue, even here, both over and under tipping, can quickly make you the least possible person at your table. In Japan and South Korea, tipping is seen as an insult.
If
you
give
money in South Korea or Japan, you'll be insulting the staff. Don't do it. We just had this when we were in Costa Rica, depending on who we asked, because I didn't know what the rules of tipping were there.
If it's an all-inclusive, you're not supposed to.
We were not at an all-inclusive.
No. Yeah, so like here, it's pretty much standard, right? 15 to 20%.
Sure.
But you, when you go
but
elsewhere.
But for a delivery, can I just ask you this? For like if you get a food delivery and it's 50 bucks.
I don't do 20%. I do $3 or $4.
Yeah, I would do. I did $5. Yeah. So evidently, I'm better than you.
Sometimes, if I always do $7, but I was just being polite and saying $3 or $4. But it's always $7.
But when we go overseas with groups and I try to get guidance on it,
yeah,
there's never a definitive answer. Oh, you know, a couple coins, or
they just say a couple coins.
Yeah,
that's it.
I don't like that word.
We were told.
I've had waiters give money back, you know, or a bartender.
Serious?
No, what?
No, that hasn't happened.
Yeah.
The people who told us, like at the hotel, we said, now you tell us when we're in a restaurant, do we tip? And they said, oh, no, 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 no. But in the restaurants, they said, yeah, a couple of dollars is always appreciated. But then at the bottom, they would add a couple of dollars. Like they would throw on a service charge. So that's essentially the same as the tip. You know what I mean? You seem confused by that. It would be the full price of whatever the meal was in the tax, and then there was a service charge. I don't remember what it was. It was like 12% or 13%.
Well, then, yeah,
so
they're
throw
making
on a
their...
couple extra bucks.
Okay, because they're putting their own
right.
thing on there, so you wouldn't tip.
Right, 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 right. Here's another one. Sitting in the back of a cab. Now, here in the United States, if you take a cab anywhere, that's where you sit. You sit
I like
in the
to
back.
Get in the front because
the front?
I like to talk. I like to... I can tell you what I do every time I'm in a cab. I don't know if you've been in one with
I
me.
Have,
I
have.
I interview them.
Say. I've seen that happen.
And not, I mean, I'm just very, you know.
And the cab driver
they do not
is
want to talk
thrilled.
To me. I'm sorry, they're going
they're
to talk to me. I start with, hi, how's it going? Okay. Oh, lovely day today, isn't it?
Right.
And then.
And you go, where are you from originally?
I usually talk like that.
I don't usually see a name with no consonants in it.
I don't
how do you pronounce
say that.
Your name?
You say that. I said, do you have family here? And usually that's when they say, no, my family is. In Mozambique.
Right, they
and
say
I
in
said,
Mozambique.
Oh, is it lovely there? And then I've warmed them up and they'll talk to me the whole ride.
But here's what they do to me. They look at me and you can sometimes you can hear their eyes hit the top of their head. They're like, how long? Can I just let you guys off here at the corner? No, we're going to the United Center. I can't do this the whole ride. You know, you sense that, don't you?
No one wants to talk anymore.
It says, well, it's customary for Americans to hop into the back of the cab in Australia, in New Zealand, and in parts of Ireland and Scotland and the Netherlands. It's considered rude if you don't ride shotgun.
I ride on the roof. I hold on to the luggage rack.
I've seen you do that. What about this? You know the sign thumbs up? Like you're happy about something? You give somebody a thumbs up?
Yeah, Fonzie.
Hey, everything. Hey. It says in a lot of countries, especially in the Middle East and in Latin America and Western Africa and Russian and Greece, a thumbs up has the same meaning as holding up your middle finger.
Well, all the times I've held up my middle finger to you, I've meant,
you meant
hey.
Things are good. Thanks, Fonz. you know how when a lot of people laugh, they do it with their mouth open? It's just an impulse? Yeah, like that, like Herman Munster. It says in Japan, laughter that exposes your teeth is considered horse-like and impolite. That's why, did you ever see, like, this is like a Japanese girl thing, like they do like a little I'm embarrassed giggle, like that.
And they cover their mouths because they're not going to show their teeth.
You don't want to show your teeth in Japan. I'm going to start laughing like that whenever I'm anywhere in public.
I wish we do have Lisa Lampanelli on.
I'm going to laugh like that.
I'll give you a dollar.
She'll think I'm Mrs. Livingston from Courtship of Eddie's Father.
Oh, Misa Eddie's Father. it fits you.
I'm
going to
do that. That's my new laugh from now on. What do you say? Like, if you're in a foreign country and somebody says, what country are you from? What would you tell them? What would be
United States?
You'd say the United States. Here's what it says here. This is according to Business Insider in South America. Claiming that you're from America, if you say America rather than the United States, it's seen as being politically incorrect. It implies that only the U.S. should be considered America and that South America is unworthy of the title. So what are you going to say from now on?
The same thing I always said, United States. Yes. Although I think sometimes I've said America.
I'm just going to do this giggle.
They're going to think you're from Asia.
And then I'm going to hit them with my Hello Kitty bag.
Well, you really are weird.
We've got more
Did
of these.
Did they spike that eggnog?
No, there's no
See
spike
eggnog. See what
happens
to him when he doesn't eat?
All right, we're going to take a quick break.
Maybe it's
That's
indigestion.
Also my Betty Rubble impression.
Yeah, that
by
was
the
a
way.
Little Pillsbury Doughboy, too.
Sometimes when I do my one man Betty Rubble show, that's the voice I use. A break and then more if you want to jump in. 312-981-7200. It's Betty Rubble and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Give your loved ones the gift of knowledge this holiday with a Chicago Tribune digital subscription. Knowledge is power. Visit chicagotribune.com/gift today. Gifting today. All right. Attention all world travelers or people who think that sometime in the future they may want to go abroad, travel to foreign countries.
I am abroad.
Yes. Yes. Over at MSN Travel, they have come up with a bunch of things that we do here in the United States that if you do in foreign countries, you'll be considered rude. For instance, did you know this, Wendy? If you use your left hand for nearly anything, like giggling, like they do in parts of Asia, you will be considered rude. I'll explain why. Not all cultures, this is grotesque, but it's true. Not all cultures have or use toilet paper. Did you know that? They tend to use their left hand instead of toilet paper.
Okay, wait a minute.
I'm left-handed, by the way.
We are not shaking your left hand.
High five.
So I bet you're better at that than we are because we're right-handed.
I've never
If I was in a foreign country, I would. Here's what I would do if I was in the bathroom. I would fly home, buy some toilet paper, and then fly back to whatever country I was in instead of using my left hand.
How about just bring some?
Bring some in your carry-on. Bring some Charmin.
I always have a little stash in my purse.
Yep.
Because sometimes you'll get into a restroom, not toilet paper, but Kleenex.
Right.
You just use a sock.
Then you put it right back on, and it's a double service.
There's some sock puppet joke somewhere that I can't. I don't think
it's for
air.
You just offended Kuklafran and Ollie, Kevin. Are you happy now? All three. The holy trinity of puppets.
They're pumping something into the studio.
Something's wrong. It says if you accept gifts... If you eat, if you do pretty much anything with your left hand in Africa, India, Sri Lanka, or the Middle East, this will disgust those people. They will be disgusted just for saying this. Here's another one. Having your hand in your pocket. That's a standard move here in the United States. People walk around, they got their hand in their pocket. It says it's considered arrogant in Turkey as well as many Asian countries like South Korea, just to put your hand in your pocket.
It is arrogant. You have your hands in your pocket almost every picture.
Why is that arrogant? It's not arrogant.
Because you...
It's just a resting place.
It's just a classic cool guy pose.
That's what it is.
You know what it is? It's because you don't know what to do with
Bill,
your hands.
Bill, do you do thumb in or thumb out over the lip of the pocket?
I put half of my four fingers in, so it's thumb out,
it's
I guess.
Okay. Forefathers.
So you go,
no, four fingers. Not my forefathers.
You know what you should do? This is what you should do in pictures from...
I know what you're going to say. Go
you
on,
should take
say
your thumb and just stick it in your belt loops. Did you know I was going to say that?
No, I
support this. This is a good look.
Yeah, if I'm
and not arrogant.
If I'm hanging out with Clint Black, I might do that. If I'm hanging out
Come
with
on,
the country
right
and at the country
your,
and Western Hall of Fame,
you got the little belt loops on your jeans. Just put your thumb in there, and the rest, yeah.
I'm going to do my Japanese girl laughing embarrassingly pose. Who do you think? Like if I did that when D.V. Sweeney was here, if we all posed for a picture, and I just had my hand like an embarrassed Japanese girl, what would he have done?
I don't know. I wish he would have tried it.
He would have slugged me. He would have just popped me.
No, he wouldn't. He would have not. You know what? Honestly, he would have done. He would have looked at me the whole rest of the interview.
Right. Right.
And when we got off the air, he'd go, "What's with that guy?
Something's wrong with him, right? Why
what did you think
like
I was
going
to say? Where you put your fingers under your armpits?
Yeah.
I was going to say that.
Yeah, like Pat Buttram.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You're
I
making
could do
me
that.
Cry.
I'm sorry.
You're All funny. Right.
Here's something else. These are more things.
You're funnier when you're hungry.
I think I am. I am. Because I'm.
I get mean when I'm hungry.
I know you do. I know. All right, here's something else. If you're traveling to foreign countries, call me first, and I'll tell you what you should not do in those countries. You know, here in the United States, if somebody gives you a present, if it's your birthday or Christmas, they give you a present, what do you do?
Say thank you.
You say thank you, and you open the present, right? don't do that in other countries. It said in most Asian countries, most notably China and India, if you open your gift in front of the gift giver, this is extremely poor form. It shows that you are greedy.
I kind of agree.
Why is that?
Because it's kind of, maybe it's just my problem because I am not a good gift receiver, as
yeah,
we know.
Yeah.
So I don't like to open a present that someone has given me unless they say, go ahead and open it. Because I never know what to do. Like if somebody, here, I got you a little something.
Yeah.
I sometimes feel like, oh, thank you so much. And then I'm going to go home and enjoy it on my own time.
But doesn't the person who gives you the gift, don't they want to see the satisfaction, even if it's fake? Because
no, yes.
We've all learned how to act and go, I was hoping I'd get one of these.
Will you teach me how to do that?
Yes.
I'm terrible.
I can do that for you.
It's a potholder with the Eiffel Tower
on
it.
This is the best.
But
it's the potholder.
Oh, yeah, that's still in our office. Thanks for that.
You haven't given me the courtesy of taking it home.
That's what Steve gave you. you
didn't not take just it me.
I shopped for that.
Excuse me, there was a mitt for you and the square one for me.
I didn't know those were for me.
Bill doesn't cook,
all
though,
for you.
Ever.
I don't cook.
Steve, did you not tell us to split up, which is, by the way, is really cheap. We should have gotten our own little set.
Everyone should get their own potholder.
Is that what you're talking about, being bluntly honest there? You just called my gift cheap? I traveled halfway across the world for that.
Yeah, I'm sure that was your goal.
It says here in France, you should never tell Steve Bertrand that his gift was not one that you wanted.
If someone's giving you a gift, like if I'm giving you a gift,
right,
and I say, oh, I got this for you, you're going to love it, go ahead and open it. I would say,
then
go ahead
open
and open it.
Right.
But if the person doesn't say, go ahead and open it, I always find myself going, should I open it?
Oh, I don't even ask. I open it, and I'll open
greedy.
Somebody else's gift. I'll go, who's that for? And they'll go, for your wife. And I'll go, I'll open that.
Once they give it to you, it's yours to do whatever you want
with. That's how it should be.
Yeah, but I
change of possession. I have them sign something. I go, here, could you sign these forms for me? And initial this, and initial this. Then I give them a copy, and then I open it up.
You're really not a lot of fun to hang out with. I do think it's just me because I'm not a good gift receiver. I cannot fake it well.
You gotta, but you learn that from the time you're a little kid. Your parents say, tell them thank you, and tell grandma you love the gift. I love the gift. Even if you don't love it, you got to pretend you love it.
That's pretending you loved the gift.
No, I play it up if she's here, but yay, I do, you know, the whole yay thing and balloons and streamers and stuff.
I did it when I was little, but now it's very...
You don't do it anymore?
I like to be genuine.
No, you got to pretend no matter what it is. You got to pretend it's
I
the best.
I love working with you.
Like that? Hey. All right, we'll take a quick break.
How about if we wrap this up on Eastern time?
You want to do that? We should do that.
Oh, my God. Right. It's, you know what? It's the sun in here. It's making us crazy.
Too sunny. It's way too sunny.
We have sunstroke.
That's what it is. It's got to be what it is.
You know what? Get my potholders. That'll help.
You could use it as a window shade. We can extend the shade.
All problems have been solved. Stick around. More show coming your way. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We're getting you primed for the weekend. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder, and we had to reschedule this guest, and we were very worried about her.
Very worried.
Lisa Lampanelli, how is your dog?
He's okay. He was just faking pregnancy, but that's happened before with so many of my friends that I'm like, just take Bland B like the rest of us.
Yeah, I was really worried, and I didn't want to ask you on the air because then I thought, you know, sometimes...
What if?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, he's not dead yet. He's only 4. But, you know, I think this emergency vet is milking me because, honestly, I took him in one night. This is Wednesday night.
Yeah.
And they did an X-ray and a full workup and blood test. Then yesterday they're like, bring him back in for a sonogram.
Wow.
I'm like, what is he knocked up? And a freaking another X-ray. Then they just literally called me, and I'm not even kidding, a half hour ago going, yeah, we really need to stick a camera down his throat and see what's going on. I said, you know what? He's an adopted dog. I paid $100. Is he really worth the $3,000?
That's the spirit.
And, you know, he's looking at me right now. He's literally got on my lap and is staring at me like, give me your money, bitch. It's not fair. I mean, if I wanted another drain on my finances, I'd get married again.
Sure, of course.
And that's not a disrespectful bitch. That's a bitch because he's a dog,
right,
and you're a female.
Right.
Exactly. I'm his, you know what? It's like, it's called a meal ticket, Parker. Calm down. And I named him after Sarah Jessica Parker, so what a surprise that he's shocking and skinny.
Why the long face?
Exactly, honey. God bless her.
Is she aware, Lisa, that you named your dog after her? Has that ever come up? Have you met her?
Well, here's the problem with me.
Yeah.
In my state of comedy and emotional unavailability, mm-hmm. I couldn't just be complimentary and say, oh, I named him after Sarah Jessica Parker because I love her and Sex and the City. I have to make a joke and say, because of the resemblance. Now, my dog is way cuter than her.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's attractive, but she's what we in the business call ugly cute. So I think she may know I named the dog after him, but she also knows the joke and probably hates me.
That's so funny.
I think it would be mean. I think it would be meaner if you named a horse after her.
That would be terribly mean.
That's so true. Have you seen that website? Sarah Jessica Parker looks like a horse.com?
No, that's a real website.
Oh my God, shut up.
Really?
We have not.
It really is?
Okay, it's literally, that's the name of it. Sarah Jessica Parker looks like a horse.com. It says what it is, and it has like 8 pictures of her.
Kevin's looking at it. We hear him laughing right now.
Right?
All I got to say is, whoa.
Yeah, and every time she's wearing, like, say, white, they have a white horse, and, you know, it's just all
they match them up.
It's adorable, I must say.
Now, Lisa, you just mentioned that your dog is 4 years old, and you didn't do that thing that a lot of dog owners do, which is multiply their age by 7.
Oh, no. If I said he's 28, then you got to assume he's 28 times 7.
Right, that would
be
too much.
Pretty freaking old. But it's almost like he's going to live for spite because he's so expensive. And,
yeah.
Again, he's an adoptee. He's a mutt. It's like adopting a kid. You don't really care about them that much.
Right. Sure, of course.
If you had an angry letter from some adopted kid, I would love it.
Can I tell you the last time you were on the phone with us, and this was about a year ago, both Wendy and I had a similar experience where we told people that you were our guest, and they both said the same thing. Oh, that mean lady from the TV. And we said, no, quite the opposite. She's as nice can be. Does that blow your cover when people meet you and find out you're actually a very nice person?
Well, yeah, but then they come to see me on stage, and I have to ramp it up a whole bunch.
Sure.
So I figure it's a win-win for me because I get to get the evil side out.
Yeah.
And, you know, on the air or on stage. And P.S., I love how your fans say on the TV.
Right.
It's like, thank you.
That's the old way of saying it. We like
it's
to keep that alive.
School, man. I'm kicking it old school myself.
And where are you kicking it next Saturday?
Hammond, Indiana. I know, Lisa, quit bragging.
The Horseshoe Casino.
Third, so I'm going to say command appearance. I'm going to say it's a command performance at the Horseshoe in Hammond, Indiana. And I would say go there, have fun. What else are you going to do? It's not like Star Wars is opening yet.
Right.
Go see me instead.
And Lisa, this is the big room. You're not playing the lounge there at the Hammond Casino. You're playing the big room.
If I play a lounge, shoot me in the face, please. Put me in an ultrasound with Parker and kill us both. Because I swear to God, I told my manager, if it ever comes the day when I'm so unpopular that I have to go back to comedy clubs, just I'm retiring. I don't even care if I'm homeless.
How many years have you been doing this?
Comedy?
Yeah.
26. That's why I'm not willing to go backwards. But, you know, for enough money, who am I kidding? I'll do anything.
How do you enjoy doing, because I love you on the roasts, on the celebrity roasts. Do you enjoy doing those?
You know what? Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad. Like, sometimes when you have people on who are just really good friends, like Jeff Ross and people like that who are funny, they're great. But some of those celebrities who they write the material for, and then it's like, I have no respect for the celebrity or something. Like, I didn't do the Justin Bieber one. Not that they asked me to do it because they skewed younger for that one.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm like, really? Should we honor him with a roast? Because as you know, a roast is an honor. It's not just to like throw at somebody. So yeah, I would say 90% of the time I have a pretty good time.
I don't think Justin Bieber earned a roast yet. You got to pay your dues.
I totally agree.
Too young.
I don't think he's earned big boy pants yet. He's got to stop.
Who's the one person that you'd say to yourself, no matter what I would be doing, I would put it down to roast that guy or that girl? Who are you just itching to roast?
Well, the thing is, people think you want to roast an enemy, but you really want to roast a friend and someone you look up to, because as we did establish, a roast is an honor.
Yeah.
So my two heroes have always been Rickles, of course, and Howard Stern. So, the second either of them asked me to, I'd be there in a flash if my dog died. I don't even care.
What are you getting Parker for Christmas? Do you get your dog gifts?
No, because he's too stupid to read a calendar. If I can't, if I couldn't teach him, do you know how stupid my dog is? You have no idea. He's like just about as stupid as SJP. Just kidding. Love you, Sarah. So he's like, he can't read an advent calendar because I'm a good Christian woman. Mm-hmm. He can't have any presents.
Nothing.
Nothing. Well, what does he? Yeah, I'll throw him a piece of wrapping paper when I'm opening all my thousands of gifts from fans all over. He'll think he stepped in S, if you know what I mean.
I do think it's funny that people go out of their way to get their pets Christmas presents because I'm not positive pets really understand the holiday.
No, they don't. They don't. They eat their own crap. They're not smart.
My dog does not eat his own stuff, and we got him an X-Wing fighter last Christmas, a little toy, and he loved it.
Oh, aren't you just the model for all pet owners?
I am.
Shut up.
I am.
Listen, is your dog one of those spoiled, rotten dogs that you bought, or did you adopt him?
We adopted him when he was 2 years old, and he's a mix, and he's big, and I love him. But he doesn't listen to me.
Do you love him more than you love your husband?
Differently, not more.
It depends what day it is.
I would say totally more. When I married Jimmy Big Balls, and I was just like, all I need to have in the prenup is I get Parker. As like, if we get divorced, we got a divorce. Look, I'm sitting here with a dog in a beach house, honey.
Things are good. Things are definitely
Thank
good.
God.
Are the holidays a happy time for you, Lisa, or do you not look forward to them?
Oh my God, I love them so
do you?
Much.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. 1 week ago, Thanksgiving was the best it's ever been. I got to say, when family's involved, I always have a blast. Sure, we're Italian, so there's the obligatory eating too much and making yourself throw up so you keep your weight off.
Sure.
I don't do that, and I'm half Italian, so I don't do that.
Then you just can't be half bulimic. You got to do the whole nine. So what happens is, at our family, then we have the obligatory huge, huge brawl and fight. And then the very next day, as you know, as an Italian, you pretend it never happened.
Yeah.
And forget about it. So do we have fun. I love the holidays.
Well, it's true, Bill. In Italians, it's nothing like a big family thing. Everybody's mean to each other. That's where it came up where I said the stranger's always right, because we're nicer to everyone else
except our own family.
Oh my God, that's so true. Tonight I'm having 8 people over for dinner. I'm one because I do like a dinner and game night for my mother every couple of weeks.
Nice. Oh, nice.
Well, I'm a sweetheart of a gal, and I want that house.
Sure. So, good move.
You know, she's a battle axe and a half, but boy, tonight I'm going to pretend she's right because, like I said, that will. She could be teetering over to like my brother better, so I got to work it a little bit.
You know, I wish we had more time, but we're out of here, and we have to take a break. So you're going to be appearing at Horseshoe Casino. She's Lisa Lampanelli. That's in Hammond, Indiana. She was bragging when she said that. Next Saturday, the 12th, and how do we get tickets?
Go to insultcomic.com or Ticketmaster, and I will see you there, honey.
Okey-dokey.
Thanks so much, Lisa. Have a great holiday.
God bless. Thank you, guys.
Take care.
Lisa
Lampanelli, everybody. Again, at the Horseshoe Casino in Hammond, Indiana, Saturday the 12th.
In honor of Sarah Jessica Parker.
In honor of Sarah Jessica Parker. We're going to take a quick break and then more show ahead. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. It's us. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder with you on WGN. Rowan Ann will be in about 15 minutes. We also have tickets to give away before the show is out, and that's in the next 10 or 11 minutes, to see Carol Burnett. So stick around for that. We'll be giving away tickets to see Carol Burnett.
Why don't we just do that right now? Let's take the 10th caller, 312-981-7200. And if you tug at your ear when you are the 10th caller, 312-981-7200, you will score a pair of tickets to see Carol Burnett, which is not on this sheet.
All right.
So we'll tell you where and when. But in the meantime, we have ABC News correspondent Jim Ryan on the line with us. Jim, there are more developments that we've heard about this couple from San Bernardino, California. And you were actually in their apartment. Wow.
Yes. Yeah. It's a little townhouse. It's a few miles away from where this all happened on Wednesday, from where the initial shooting happened within that office where all those people were, and then where the shootout happened. I'm standing at San Bernardino and Mountain View, very close to the location where the thing finally came to an end. The black SUV is still sitting there, riddled with bullet holes. It's still the subject of a physical investigation. The street is closed off at either end. But again, a couple of miles, a few miles away from here, is the townhouse where Syed Farouk and Tashfeen Malik were living and had since this past May. Essentially an ordinary little townhouse, except according to the FBI, when they got there after this all happened, They found bomb-making materials and an arsenal of weapons and ammunition, Wendy.
That is unbelievable. I heard the list of all the stuff they had, the pipe bombs. Thankfully, some of the pipe bombs did not detonate. Something went wrong with those?
Yes. I mean, it's fairly simple technology, but not terribly reliable either. These pipe bombs, regardless of where they learned about them, and some people are saying that they learned about them from a publication that's put out by Al-Qaeda, that these things are supposed to work. They use the remote control devices from toys, toy cars and whatnot, but apparently they did not work.
And they have seized, my guess, Jim, is they have seized anything like computers or anything that could be used in this investigation. That's already out of the apartment, correct?
It is. I mean, anything at all that could be a part of this is gone. And we were told that there were broken computers, that cell phones had been smashed or thrown away as part of the apparent effort of these two to cover their tracks. Still, FBI forensics experts will be looking through that, trying to extract any data they can to figure out exactly who might have been in contact with these two people to determine whether this was a wider conspiracy or act of terrorism.
And at this point, we've been told the development is the FBI is now treating this San Bernardino attack as terrorism, full-blown terrorism at this point.
Right. I think they're finally satisfied. And they've been very, very careful in this investigation, not to jump to conclusions. I think to the dismay of a lot of people around the country who see this as an obvious act of terrorism. But I think they had to take into account that Syed Farouk worked with a lot of those people who were killed. He worked for the county for the last 5 years. And so many of those in that room were co-workers of his. So I think they needed to rule out that that workplace violence was behind this and to look more in the direction of an act of terrorism.
Jim, I understand that you're a newsman, but when you go into a place like this, a dwelling like this, is there an eeriness that kind of comes over you?
Well, I think in a way, yeah. And, you know, I've been in situations like that before in different settings where this, and I think what's remarkable about it is how normal everything looks.
Yeah.
You know, baby formula sitting in a can and baby toys in the corner and pictures on the wall. And it looks like a normal place. You can see evidence that the police were there, that a SWAT team had come through and broken the windows and knocked down walls and whatnot. But it is sort of an eerie feeling. I think you're right, Bill.
We were talking about this at the start of the show, and ever since I found out the information about Syed Farouk and Tashfeen Malik dropping their baby off at, I believe, his mother's house, I cannot stop thinking about that poor, innocent child.
Right, and imagine the life that she's going to have now, that knowing what her parents ended up doing here in this case, and you just have to hope that she has some sort of support behind her. And I mean, his family is as baffled by any of this as anybody. His brother, who served in the Navy, by the way, said that he has absolutely no idea what snapped in his brother's mind. There is some thinking, by the way, Wendy, that, you know, when they came back, Farouk went to Saudi Arabia and he found a bride and brought her back here to this country. There is some thinking that she may have radicalized him. That it wasn't the other way around, or they didn't pick this up somewhere else, that she might have brought this idea back and then driven it into his head, and that's how this all got started.
I've heard those rumors, too, that she is the one that perhaps maybe brainwashed him or whatever it would be. But now, why are we not seeing pictures of her, Jim? We have seen photos of Syed Farouk, but Tashfeen Malik, we're not seeing any pictures of her, and all the listeners keep texting us and asking, why not?
You're right. You know, I don't think there are many pictures around here. She's not from this country. Farouk was born in Chicago, as you probably know, but she was born in Saudi Arabia, born in Pakistan, I believe, and lived in Saudi Arabia for a long time. And so, at least in this country, there just aren't many pictures of her. People were looking around in that apartment for them, and I don't think anybody found anything like that. They found other relatives, but not pictures of her.
Jim, we got word earlier in the show today that she had made some sort of a declaration on Facebook pledging some sort of allegiance to the terrorist group ISIS. What happens now as a result of that? What's our next move now that we believe that to be true?
Well, I think that was really the tip to the FBI that this was an act of terrorism, that she was pledging allegiance to a leader within ISIS, and doing so, by the way, not under her own name, but under a different name. But Mark Zuckerberg himself confirmed that that she is the one who made that posting, even if it came under someone else's name. And so I think that it just solidifies that thinking that this was not just an act of domestic violence or some sort of workplace violence, that it was actually either orchestrated from outside or inspired by someone outside.
See, it amazes me, though, that someone would take Facebook as a source, you know?
Yeah.
Like, she could just be writing anything, but, you know, we see it on Facebook, therefore it is. Things have changed, certainly.
Right, and what was supposed to be a fun place to post pictures from your vacation, now it's a credible source to the FBI. You're right.
Yeah, start going back to posting pictures of your dinners.
Right.
That's
better.
Jim, stay safe. We thank you so much for your report. Jim Ryan, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Wendy. Appreciate it, Bill.
Bye.
ABC News correspondent Jim Ryan. I don't know that I'd want to go in there, but
wouldn't it have such an eerie pall as you walked through it? Wouldn't you just feel like a cold finger on you? It'd be very hard to just walk through that house.
Yeah, but then again, it's like you want to see.
Yeah,
I don't know.
So.
We need to congratulate Lupe, who is from River Grove. Lupe won a pair of tickets to see award-winning actress Carol Burnett May 20th. I know it seems like it's way off in advance. Chicago Theater, it's going to be an amazing night, an evening of laughter and reflection, where the audience gets to ask Carol Burnett questions and they get spontaneous answers from the earlobe puller.
Right.
This is going to be such a night.
Will she do her Tarzan yell, Wendy? Does it say on the sheet if she'll do her Tarzan yell?
My guess is absolutely.
I hope she does.
You can get your tickets. It started today at Ticketmaster, 10 a.m. There may be some left. Go to Ticketmaster or the Chicago Theater box office. But Lupe and River Grove won a pair of tickets, and they're also going to resurrect the Carol Burnett Show on DVD. Did you know this?
I heard rumors.
Yeah. The award-winning 1967-78 CBS comedy variety series, The Carol Burnett Show, Time Life's new DVD set, The Lost Episodes.
Good. Very, very good news.
Might have figured out your Christmas present.
I'll take it. Well, a quick break. We'll find out what Ro and Anna have coming up in just a minute. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.